This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. No progress reported. Following a meeting today between a United Nations envoy and the junta leader of Myanmar, neither side made a comment. The military government of Myanmar put the death toll from the protests at 10. Dissident groups say up to 200 people were killed. The head of Blackwater Security is rejecting charges that his staff was out of order when they opened fire in a crowd, killing 11 Iraqis. Blackwater is being investigated by the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Washington lawmakers are taking up legislation today requiring President Bush to show a concrete plan for withdrawal of troops from Iraq. A Washington Post ABC News poll shows only about 25% of Americans support the administration's $190 billion war funding request, while 70% want the proposed allocation reduced. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown is visiting Iraq for the first time. He's meeting with authorities to discuss a drawdown of Britain's 5,000 troops in Iraq's southern province of Basra, 1,000 of them by Christmas. For only the second time in 50 years, the leaders of South and North Korea met today for peace talks. At the top of their agenda, Pyongyang's dismantlement of its nuclear weaponry program. In Canada, a federal judge acquitted three doctors, a Red Cross official, and a U.S. drug maker of criminally infecting Canadians with AIDS and hepatitis C contaminated blood. More than 3,000 Canadians died of the tainted blood in the late 1980s and early 1990s. Well, when it comes to raising money for the presidential campaign, Senator Hillary Clinton leads the way this quarter. Clinton raised $22 million this summer. Senator Barack Obama isn't far behind with $19 million raised from July through September. In Minnesota, opening arguments begin today in the first trial of a consumer accused of copyright violation for illegally sharing songs on a file-sharing network. Madison Square Garden and its chairman were ordered to pay over $11 million to former New York Knicks executive Anuncha Brown Sanders. Sanders sued the company for sexual harassment by Knicks coach Isaiah Thomas. You are listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address in city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. We are Boulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.
According to a study at Emory University, 33% of American adults are obese, compared with 17% of their European counterparts. Americans also suffer more often from cancer, diabetes, and other chronic ailments. A hurricane team at Colorado State University increased its estimate of the number of tropical storms in the 2007 Atlantic hurricane season. Forecasters say this year will have 17 storms instead of 15. They predict there will be a total of 7 hurricanes. According to a report by the Associated Press, lab accidents involving deadly viruses, poisonous chemicals, and contaminated animals are on the rise. The number of laboratories approved to handle deadly substances has doubled in the last 3 years. Sales of Fords have dropped 21% in September, while Toyota and Chrysler posted smaller drops and GM held steady. Honda sales increased more than 9% and Nissan gained 7%. Home sales hit a record low in August, according to the National Association of Realtors. Many would-be home buyers are having difficulty getting loans, and economists say the housing market shows no signs of improving soon. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 40 points. The gold was trading down 1780 an ounce, and the NASDAQ was up 6 points. The S&P 500 was flat. There's more on our website, Quality News Network.
Okay, don't you
stop America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome to this Tuesday edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. At least I think I am. If you're there and I'm here, that means I'm me. Last I checked. Now, okay, let's... It is a terrible thing to have... whatever it is I should be diagnosed with. Word geekiness. Maybe it's a function of obsessive-compulsive disorder. But, you know, just for the record. Just for the record. And you guys can hate me for this if you want to. But God knows it drives my poor wife crazy. But I guess because I've been raised on language and spent my life concerned with the spoken word, the written word, but largely, a lot of the time, the spoken word, mispronunciations of the English language drive me batty. So I have to... I don't know. I think maybe it's a little bit like some form of Tourette's, because there are certain things that I hear, and it's just like fingernails down a chalkboard or a metal garden implement being raked across concrete. Oh. And the word is realtor, not realtor, not relator, realtor, realtor, R-E-A-L-T-O-R, realtor. Okay? I'm not pointing at y'all, but I heard that in the newscast, and I love our friends over at Quality News Network. But that's one of those words. That's one of those words that just kicks in my sort of pronunciation Tourette's or whatever the hell it is. Realtor. Real estate. Realty. Realtor. Okay? Just like it's not often. A lot of times you'll hear people who are trying to be pretentious about their language, and they will say, often. I have often dined at yada, yada, yada. Often I have shopped at Saks Fifth Avenue, Bergdorf Goodman, whatever. Often. No. Look it up. Often. You don't pronounce the T. And it's not realtor. That would be R-E-L-A-T-O-R, realtor. No. It's realtor. Because it relates to real property. Realty. Personal property is referred to as personalty. Realty. Realtor. There. All square? Okay, good. Thank you for putting up with my ugly little moment of Tourette's or obsessive compulsive disorder or whatever it is. Okay. Now I'm all better. Now it's not like I have to touch the doorknob 5 times or turn the lights off 6 times or go back 17 times to make sure the coffee pot's turned off. Realtor! Okay, all better. Personality is different from personality. Personality is what you have. Well, you have personality, too. Your personal property is personality. the things that make up who you are, that's personality. See what it does to me? See what happened? Yeah, and there you are in the chat room, poking me with that little sharp stick. But it's going to be okay. We're going to have fun tonight. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. I've done something, and you may or may not approve of it. You may be get frustrated with me for it. I don't know. But in the third hour of the program tonight, we're going to be joined by a right-winger. A right-winger. That's right, I said it. A right-winger. We're going to be joined in the third hour by a right-winger by the name of Jack Thomas, who thinks that you and I are what he calls non-normies. We're not normal. He thinks Bill O'Reilly is normal. He thinks Rush Limbaugh, the OxyContin addict, the street drug junkie, is normal. He thinks Sean Hannity is normal. And he thinks that Bill O'Reilly is being dragged through the mud by the people he calls non-normies at Media Matters for America, MediaMatters.org. So he's going to join us at 8 o'clock, a little bit after 8 o'clock Eastern Time. And I don't know, maybe you can get in on the conversation if you want to ask a question. But we're going to go through what it is that constitutes what he calls normie America. Apparently, Mr. Thomas, he considers himself a seemingly ordinary guy who comes out of the ranks of Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous, where he recovered, past tense. Last I checked with anybody, the process in either of those organizations has always been recovering, participial form. See, there it goes again. See what happens? Not past tense, but a participial form of the word recovering, not recovered. And he has decided to define America. Having participated in a 12-step program, he is has declared himself competent to define America, and part of that definition is that you and me, us liberals, us normal, us decent people, are actually not decent and not normal, and normal is actually people who suggest to women against their will that they want to have sex with falafel with them. So that conversation is coming up in the third hour. I hope you'll stick around for it. I may need you. Meanwhile, speaking of sex with strange objects, it's a less than marvelous day in Alabama, because yesterday, October the 1st, you know, I told you, it's the first Monday in October. Do you know where your constitutional rights are? Well, they were going, for a lot of people in Alabama, they were going swirling down the toilet in Washington, D.C., at the Supreme Court of the United States, because the Supreme Court yesterday declined my left hind foot, refused to hear the appeal of Alabama's ban on the sale of marital aids, what some would call sex toys, pretty much putting paid to a 9-year legal battle and making sure that people in Alabama cannot use any form of help in achieving orgasm. Okay, I know it's 6 o'clock on the East Coast. It's 3 o'clock on the West Coast. If you feel you've got to get your children out of the room for this kind of conversation, I guess you do. I'm not trying to put anybody off. This is just news. The legislature in Alabama enacted an anti-obscenity law. Dig it. They consider vibrators to be obscene. and they forbade by their language there the sale, the distribution of, quote, any device designed or marketed as useful primarily for the stimulation of human genital organs for anything of pecuniary value. Well, you know, I guess I think it was the freaks over at the NRA who and the right wingers and the gun you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold dead fingers types who reminded us that when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. Well, Alabama has taken that and turned it on its head. And in point of fact, when vibrators are outlawed, only outlaws will have vibrators. That's the state of affairs in Alabama, where you can buy, as long as you've got an Alabama driver's license, you can walk into a gun store and carry out an arsenal. Shotguns, semi-automatic pistols, semi-automatic rifles, Bowie knives, throwing stars, anything that'll cut, stab, kill, penetrate, or maim, unless the penetration is for the purposes of healthy human sexual activity. You can buy guns all day long in Alabama. You can buy ammunition all day long in Alabama. But you can't buy a vibrator. It's silly. And of course, I'm sure that one of the legislators who voted in favor of this was that Gerald Allen goober who every year introduces the same piece of legislation in the legislature seeking to ban any reference to homosexual activity or any book or play by a homosexual author from the library shelves of any library funded with monies from the state of Alabama. And I'm sure he was right there voting for it. I'm also sure that being as how they're authoritarian right-wingers, as we have frequently found to be the case, that a lot of these right-wingers who voted for this legislation, if you were to seize their computers and have a look inside, you'd probably find some kiddie sex. The injunction on the prosecution of people under this statute will be removed in the next couple of days. And at that time, any human being in Alabama who is caught selling a vibrator, let's say it, a dildo, a buzzer, a this or a that, will be subject to up to a year in jail. Upon a conviction for a second offense, it's not a year in jail, you know, the county lockup. It becomes a prison term of not less than one, nor more than 10 years. Now, I don't know what your position is. See, it's not position. Okay, I probably shouldn't put it that way. I don't know what your stance... I don't know how you feel. I don't know what you think about sex toys. I'm rather ambivalent myself. I take an approach that sex between consenting adults is as probably as healthy a thing as any human beings can engage in, as long as it doesn't involve the transmission of disease. The emotional contact, the emotional bonding between two people who love each other, or even like each other a whole bunch, is as meaningful a thing as exists on the planet. If they like to use things in the AIDS, not the disease, the, you know what I mean, toys, more power to them. So what? What business is it of the legislature of the state of Alabama? Fools, what are they going to do? I don't know. Is there a cucumber ban coming? Carrots? Candlesticks? You know, if you go, I've been told, I've read, I wasn't on the dig, so I can't verify it personally. But I have read that in digs in ancient Greece and ancient Egypt and other ancient places, that among the things that turn up in those early, early cultures are sex toys. Because somewhere right about the time that the monkeys stopped dancing around the obelisk with the bones in their hands and realized that they were living critters on the face of this earth and that there was a consciousness, right about that time they started enjoying sex and they started looking for ways to make sex even more fun than it already was. Even that far back, I'm sure there was a right-wing Alabamian a chimpanzee person who was howling, "No, no! You gotta do it my way!" Now, bear in mind, the Alabama law, to be fair, does not ban the possession of sex toys, so Alabamians can drive across the state line into, I don't know, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, and buy a sexual device to help them have a more enriched sexual experience, either together or alone. What the hell business is it of mine? More importantly, what the hell business is it of the Alabama legislature? They can possess some Alabamians, but they can't sell them. Which raises the open question, can you give them away? Similar laws, by the way, know that an Alabamian cannot cross the line into Georgia and buy a sex toy because they've been banned there. An Alabamian can also not cross the state line into Mississippi and buy a sex toy because they've been banned there. Texans? No, sorry. You can't have one either. Now, similar laws have been struck down in Louisiana, Kansas, and Colorado, upheld in Georgia, Mississippi, and Texas. One would think, since there is a divergence of opinion as to what is and isn't legal, that's the kind of thing that the Supreme Court is kind of designed to deal with. Conflicts of laws between one state and another. But no. No, no, and I guess I can understand, can't you? I can understand why the Supreme Court would decline to hear this case. After all, yesterday, the first day of the court's new term, with a brand new, soon-to-be blockbuster bestseller by Clarence Slappy Thomas, My Grandfather's Grandson, or Grandson of My Grandfather, or something like that, in which he rails against left-wing zealots who came after his nomination based on the fact that the freak is incompetent to sit on the court. You couldn't have the Supreme Court. This was one of those collegiality moments. When the Supreme Court said, look, okay, you've got the new book coming out there, Slappy, and we all know about your history with the pube on the Coke can and the long dong silver and the sex toy. And we can't be taking up a case like the Alabama case when your new book comes out that claims that none of it really ever happened. We'll give you this one, Slappy. That's as good a reason as I can find, because there's no sense whatsoever in not taking the case. You have a clear conflict of laws between the several states. Louisiana, Kansas and Colorado on the one hand for healthy sexual activities, And on the other hand, the puritanical, authoritarian, uptight, hung up, kinked out of their freaking minds conservatives in Mississippi, Georgia, and Alabama, and Texas. You know, we talked just last night about the right-wing authoritarian U.S. attorney freak who is currently cooling in his heels in a federal lockup of some sort in Michigan, having gotten off a plane there with the intention of having sex with a 5-year-old girl. Caught with a baby doll and a tube of Vaseline. Oddly enough, he was not carrying the Buzzerator 5000. And yet he was an upstanding member of his community. One to whom the community entrusted their children for sporting activities and coaching and the life lessons that go with participating in sports. Oh, he was teaching some life lessons, all right. And somehow or another, nothing he planned to do with that 5-year-old child had to do with anything in the way of a marital aid. Or something that squirmed or buzzed or inserted or whatever. No, he was going to do it with the equipment that God gave him. Some God, huh? The Alabama Attorney General's office immediately notified county district attorneys to get out there and bust the smut. Is there nothing better going on in Alabama? I mean, I was just down there. It ain't exactly Leave It to Beaver world. Oh, I probably shouldn't have said that. Alabama has lots of problems. Alabama has poverty in the extreme. Alabama has school systems, on the one hand, filthy rich school systems that have full vibraphone, xylophone, marimba, yada, yada, yada sections to their marching band, and 20 miles away there's a high school using a 50-year-old science text. Because the school systems in Alabama are so unevenly administered and unevenly funded. Alabama has lots of problems. Alabama still has race problems. Tuscaloosa County is getting ready to resegregate its schools. And yet, what does Alabama's legislature focus on? Whether or not a woman can have a little bit of assistance reaching sexual satisfaction, and the ultra-righteous, church-going, decent Americans down in Alabama's legislature answered a resounding no, you can't. You know, it probably causes a woman to catch lesbianism. Jesus. Yeah, you think I'm mocking. No. Walk around, talk to a good conservative Alabamian sometime. They'll tell you things like that. Where do you think I get these voices in my head? When vibrators are outlawed, only outlaws will have vibrators. Let's go to the phones and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. This is Tom from Richmond, California.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm a little off subject for today, it seems. I'm not listening live, but...
There's no such thing as off subject, Tom.
Well, I've got a little bit of a tidbit for you that I think is very interesting. You were talking last week about the spent uranium munitions.
Yes.
And, of course, uranium is used because it's quite a bit heavier, denser than lead.
Right.
I mean, compared to uranium, lead is like using aluminum bullets.
Right.
They don't work very well. But uranium is actually, I understand, going to be phased out in favor of tungsten. Tungsten's almost twice as dense as lead. information comes from an acquaintance who is in a position to know in the U.S. government. And it turns out that the United States has very small tungsten reserves, and most tungsten comes from China. Isn't that lovely?
Oh, my. Well, you know, there had to be an angle, didn't there, Tom?
Yeah. I just thought maybe you'd appreciate that. It's just, that one just blows me away.
It does me too. And it's interesting. I had an email from another of our listeners, one of our rocket scientists. Literally, you know, there are rocket scientists who listen to this program. And he was explaining to me that a thin jacketing on something like the depleted uranium could have alleviated a whole bunch of it. But, you know, that would cost an extra, you know, 15.27893 cents per round. And you can't have that kind of money being wasted in, among the defense contractors.
No, you gotta spend it on Blackwater instead.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, look, those guys are working overtime, Tom. After all, it turns out they wrote the government's report on the whole nightmare in Iraq. With the shootings. Did you catch that one?
Oh, I missed that one.
Yeah, Blackwater, and of course it's reported breathlessly by CNN, Blackwater contractor wrote government report on incident. And I read it, and I just make the Homer Simpson noise. Thump, you know. Because why should we be surprised? I mean, the pharmaceutical industry wrote the law on, Medicare Part D prescription plan. The pollution industry wrote the Bush administration Clear Skies initiative.
The logging industry wrote the
healthy forests.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
I bet. Yeah.
So why should it come as a surprise that Blackwater actually wrote the government's report on the slaughter in Iraq?
Where's it going, Bob? Where's it going?
Straight to hell, Tom. Straight to hell.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right.
You know,
it's got to get a lot worse before it gets better, though.
Where are we, and what are we doing in this handbasket? You know.
Man. Yep.
Well, it's great to hear from you.
Well, nice to talk to you, and maybe someday I'll be able to listen live here. But for now, I gotta sit down and get back to work here.
Well, I
just thought I'd pass that little thing on.
Well, I appreciate it. Tungsten. Charming. It used to be in razor blades and swords and stuff, but no,
it's in welding electrodes, and, you know, it's a useful metal.
Yeah, so why do you want to waste it in bullets or artillery rounds?
Especially when you don't have any.
Yeah, especially when you don't have any.
Well, it's not as toxic, I guess, as uranium. So maybe the intention is good. I don't know. But, you can't really talk about good intentions when you're making bullets, I'm afraid.
I think you're right. Tom, take care, and I hope we'll hear from you again soon. Don't worry about not listening live, man. You're on the cutting edge, and you're helping to create new media.
Okay, Bob.
All right. Later, Tom. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I love getting to hear from the people I don't ordinarily hear from because they don't listen live. This is exciting. This is very exciting. So, I tell you what, let me try to do the right thing. Take a little break. Come back. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-5453. Whatever's on your mind, you're welcome to bring along. And if you don't, I will. This is the radio that you make possible. This is your liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Water of Love? Can't buy that in Alabama either.
Want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. To request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, S-H-E-A-R-S. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they plant a tree at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Am I getting the hang of this producing all by yourself thing, you think? Getting a little bit better? I mean, that was a whole break, and I don't think I screwed it up, did I? Yay me! Okie dokie, let's go to the phones, and we are joined right off the bat by our good friend calling from Florida, the Cossack. Hey, Coss, how you doing, buddy?
How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Alive and semi-kicking.
Well, as long as there's a little bit of kicking involved.
You know, if if we sheathed those vibrators in tungsten, then they could be sold as weapons, and Alabama would allow them.
You're absolutely right. I don't know. Maybe sex toy salespeople will have to resort to setting up gun shops where all the sex toys look like firearms.
Well, even better. I mean, you know, just so 50 caliber rounds with the powder taken out.
I'll leave that. No. You know, I think you'd probably get a double shudder from Agnes on that one. Maybe even an eek.
It would work, though.
What a bunch of foolishness, though.
Well, it's insane. But it's about as insane as the laws they had on the books up until the 60s that in Connecticut you couldn't sell prophylactics.
Yes, yes, indeed. What's the name of the case? Come on. It's the case that the right wingers really want to overturn. They're not really after Roe versus Wade.
Exactly.
Is it the Planned Parenthood case? Is that it?
I'm trying to remember.
I put that on a brain cell that I must have killed later.
The Connecticut, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Somebody versus Connecticut. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Okay.
I'll have to look.
Yeah, and that's the one that established the right to privacy. That's where the right to privacy comes from. It doesn't come from Roe versus Wade. It comes from that case.
Oh, absolutely.
And in order to overturn Roe, they're going to have to overturn that one too. And at that point, and I don't think a lot of women in America fully grasp it. For that matter, I don't think a lot of men grasp it, because that case goes to the heart of it. That case goes to a man's right to purchase condoms as well.
Mm-hmm. That was the whole point of it. It was you had to purchase a condom. You had to be married. You had to have children. You had to be past a certain age.
Exactly, and you know, it's just what these people. Sometimes in my darker moments, Koss, I'm tempted to think, okay, let them have their way. Let's just see what the America they want looks like.
Oh, I don't think I want to go there.
Well, I understand, but you know, I don't think they want to go there either. That's the point.
Well,
they want to gripe and complain and piss and moan, as it were, about how bad things are. But if you actually put them in the position of having to deal with stuff, I mean, they've been in that position for the last 6 years, haven't they?
Well, the thing is, most of them are like that assistant U.S. attorney who's in jail now in Detroit. They want to tell you what to do, but by God, they don't want to do it.
No. No. I mean, and how many? I mean, you live down there fairly close to Gulf Breeze, don't you?
Oh yeah, I used to live in Gulf Breeze.
Are you seeing much coverage out there, or is it just kind of a blackout?
Nothing.
You're kidding.
No. We're not going to talk about that. Well, you got...
We don't air our dirty laundry in public.
Correct. I mean, you had a two-day wonder about the legislator paying an undercover cop $20 for BJ because he was scared of them black folk. And then it's gone. It never happened. It's all them horrid liberal type people.
Oh, I know. Griswold versus Connecticut.
There you go, Griswold. Correct.
And you know, I'm sitting there thinking Chevy Chase versus Connecticut, Vacation versus Connecticut. Yeah, and that's the sick way that my poor little brain has to work. I gotta drill down through Chevy Chase, who played a member of the Griswold family in National Lampoon's Vacation, before I can get to Griswold versus Connecticut.
Correct. That's the one.
That's what blows my mind. And I know you've got a little bit of a legal background, or maybe a lot of a legal background, Koss.
Good bit.
Probably more than you want to think about. How is there any other explanation besides not embarrassing Slappy Thomas for turning this case down? You've got a clear conflict of laws. You've got a statute that's clearly in conflict with Griswold versus Connecticut. Moreover, you've got a statute that's in conflict with the Interstate Commerce Clause. And the Supreme Court of the United States will fairly leap out of their chairs and out of their little black robes to protect the Interstate Commerce Clause, won't they?
Well, of course, because without the abuse of the Interstate Commerce Clause, they wouldn't be able to run the drug war, for example, and have federal laws outlawing, say, California state laws about medical marijuana.
And see, the thing with them refusing cert on this Alabama case, they don't have to explain themselves. They just say, go away.
Right.
And you don't know what the vote was, and you don't know who was in favor of hearing it versus who wasn't.
No.
You know, this just astonishes me. How is this not free speech? How is this not freedom of assembly? I mean, so, well, you know what I'm getting at.
That's the whole thing. They only take the cases that they want for whatever reason they want and refuse the cases that they don't want to deal with.
Principles of federalism to dictate to us that we not interfere in the state's rights of Alabama to keep people from having joy buzzers.
Yep. I mean, that's how insane it is.
It's nuts. I mean, suffice to say, it's unhealthy.
Well, of course it is. But, you know,
I bet you can still buy a Klan costume in Alabama.
Oh, God, yes. Hey, the Klan is still a very social club down here.
Bet you can still buy a lawn jockey in Alabama.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, you've seen that, Top Gear clip of the Brits trying to drive through Alabama?
Yeah.
And you saw what happened.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, it's just so sad, because that is my home ground. And there's so much good to recommend to Alabama. But they send these unmitigated morons to their state house. You know, go ahead.
I think I have a theory about what happened to the South. Is the vast majority of the intelligentsia of the South was wiped out during the Civil War, and the ones that remained behind to reproduce were not. And that's what's happened to it.
But even after the Civil War, so much genius came out. I mean, have you ever read the socialist writings of Helen Keller?
Oh, yeah. She was different in a lot of ways. You know,
I understand it, but it's genius is still being produced. I mean, I can refer to my good friend Patterson Hood of the Drive-By Truckers. That guy's as sharp as a tack. Of course, he had to leave Alabama to succeed. I think I'm moderately intelligent. I'm not in Alabama.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. All the people who have any intelligence left usually do leave.
I guess it's a little bit like the brain drain that we've subjected Iraq to, isn't it?
Yeah.
The enlightened people, and see, that's part of the problem. That's where the sectarian violence comes from, is that the enlightened people who have enough common sense to look up and say, listen, Sunni, Shia, Kurd, we're all human beings. We can build a nation. We can be happy together. We can be prosperous. And the crazy people say, nah, you got to leave or we're going to kill you. So the surgeons are gone. The doctors are gone. The scientists are gone. The philosophers are gone. Everybody's gone except the people who sit around wondering whether the Quran allows you to wear your wristwatch on your left or your right hand. And how many mullahs can dance on the head of a pin?
Exactly. Oh, something else I wanted to bring up real quick. So you had Mark on Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
He made a point, but he only made part of a point, I think. He said, well, you know how it is. We Jews have a right to feel paranoid.
Yeah, and I agree.
And that's true. However,
so do the Sioux, so do the Cheyenne, so do the Cherokee.
Exactly. And you know, he was we had a cute little exchange or part of one where he was saying, "Well, you know, give Kosovo to the Albanians, you know, the Serbs were the bad guys anyway," because I tried to point out to him, "Wait a minute. You have to understand, the people you want to, you know, that were your allies and your friends, the, you know, the Croatians, the Bosnian Muslims, the Albanians, these people killed over a million Serbs in World War II out of a total population of just about 8 million.
Oh yeah, the Bosnians and the Croats were on the wrong side of that little dust up.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, you think the Serbs weren't just a little bit paranoid when you had the Croatians running around and going Sieg Heil, for God's sakes, when the German troops, the peacekeeping troops, rolled in? I mean, the Germans were looking at them like, have you lost your mind?
Well, because the Serbians are historically and culturally allied to the Russians.
Yeah, and to us. I mean, in Operation Halyard during World War II, the Serbs saved over 500 downed American airmen and repatriated them back to us and lost a whole hell of a lot of Serbs in the process.
Yes.
The Ustasha, the Croatians, killed them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I couldn't help noticing that it was a... and, you know, I hear these terrorism warnings, like what we had yesterday, that a Bosnian Muslim with a backpack that contained, what, explosives and radical Muslim materials was caught at the Vienna airport. Did you run across that one, Kost?
Oh, at the U.S. Embassy.
Oh, at the U.S. Embassy. I'm sorry.
Trying to get in, yeah.
I'm a little skeptical of that because, you know, we're constantly being terrified. So, you know, I take anything that's offered proffered by the Bush administration or, frankly, the lackey media with a grain of salt. But, you know, look, the Balkans, you know, the entire face of modern society changed in the Balkans, you know, thanks to the assassination of Franz Joseph.
Right. But do you know why he was assassinated?
Yeah, because he was a royal bastard.
Well, that and the fact that in the 1878 conference, where the Serbs have been fighting with the Turks for a long time, they had just gotten their their own independence for Serbia in 1864, and they were trying to get the Ottomans to leave, to go back. And the Austrians said, okay, in that case, we'll take Bosnia as our colony. And they're saying, no, we don't want to be a colony.
Yeah, we want to be a sovereign, free people. Sure.
Yeah, we want to join with our brothers, the Serbs. We want to be our own people. We don't want an overlord. Thank you.
And, you know, and therein lies, like I said, a lot of the history of the rising so-called modern world. The modern world was born in blood.
Yeah.
And a lot of that blood flowed right out of the Balkans.
And unfortunately, in that piece I read on my blog about Western civility, we certainly haven't demonstrated it in the last 300 years. We certainly weren't real civil to the Native Americans.
No.
When we came over here.
No, but I think the difference between that and the Holocaust is the Holocaust we saw firsthand, and we had photographs, and we had film footage, we had audio.
Right.
There's no audio of the Trail of Tears. There is only written reportage.
Right, but, I mean, you know, we actually did a much more thorough job of eradicating the Native Americans than the Germans did of eradicating European Jewry.
There's no argument. There's no argument in that.
When, you know, when Columbus landed, there were over 20 million Native Americans. By the turn of the 20th century, there were only 2 million left.
Mm-hmm.
That's over 90%, folks.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and plus we took
but we don't but,
in
but,
country.
But we don't, you know, we don't acknowledge our own shortcomings, cause.
No.
We look at the shortcomings of others. And also, to a certain extent, you know, there was recorded history, you know, long before we started wiping out the Native Americans, there was a long and bloody history of pogroms and suppressions centering on things like the blood libel from almost 1 A.D., well, okay, more like 500 A.D. forward.
Right. Well, you know what the significance of the year 1492 is, right?
Which significance?
Well, I mean, yeah, they discovered they discovered America, of course. But in 1492, that was also the year that the Spanish crown had the first pogrom and evicted all of their Jews.
Yes. Because Ferdinand and Isabella were also actively engaged, because they had only recently succeeded in consolidating their crown and evicting the Moors.
Correct.
And evicting...
And they were good Christians, good Catholics.
Right. At the same time, let's remember, at the same time that the Spaniards evicted the Moors, they also evicted indoor plumbing.
Right.
Bathing. Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Anything but the most basic levels of literacy. Architecture. Mathematics. Set themselves back, 200-300 years.
We tend to forget, especially the right-wing nut jobs, when they inveigh against everything Muslim and Arab, you know, they're useless and they're worthless and this. What do you call our number system?
Oh, sure. The Arabic numerals. Otherwise, it would, it would be IV minutes before VI.
There you go.
It's, you ever tried to do math with Roman numerals? Ain't easy.
It's murderous.
It's a lot easier to do it when you've got a zero like the Maya or the Arabs had.
Well, the Arabs had the numerals. The zero came from India.
Well, that's true, too. But, I mean, it got incorporated into the Arabic numeral system and not into the Roman numeral system.
But, I mean, you know, we forget that. We forget that it was the Arabs that developed the science of optics.
Sure.
You know.
Hey, when it's a particularly rough night here, Koss, and I have to shut everything down at the end of the evening and curl up in the fetal position in the corner, and I've got a little glass of, Rittenhouse rye bottled in bond, whatever, over some tinkling cubes of ice, I always lift it in toast to the Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
Because they invented distillation.
Yes.
Now, bear in mind, my people perfected it, but, you know.
Oh, God, yes.
Peat moss. It's amazing what it can do for a good for the distillation process. Hey, Koss, we got to run along, brother. It's always good talking to you.
My pleasure, sir.
We'll talk soon.
All right, take care.
Bye now. Our good friend, the Cossack, calling from Northwest Florida. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll come to you in due course after the news. You know the phone number, right? Sure you do. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or 304-658-5453 on your nickel. Chime right in, join right in. Hey, we're only an hour away from a right winger. You ready? I don't even know if I am. This is the network that you build. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Through Bakersfield, listening to gospel music on the college radio station. And the preacher said, you know, you always have the Lord by your side. And I was so pleased to be informed of this, that I ran 20 red lights in his honor. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. Girl, I was kind of late.
This is the Quality News Network. The head of private security company Blackwater defended his staff before House Oversight and Government Reform Committee today. His testimony comes as part of the government's investigation into a deadly shootout last month in Iraq involving his staff. 11 Iraqis were killed. Washington lawmakers consider a bill that would require President Bush to show a concrete plan for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. A Washington Post ABC News poll shows only about 25% of Americans support the administration's $190 billion war funding request. 70% say the amount should be less. Prime Minister Gordon Brown of Britain is visiting Iraq for the first time. He's meeting with authorities to discuss a drawdown of Britain's 5,000 troops in Iraq's southern province of Basra. The drawdown would have 1,000 of them home by Christmas. A UN report finds that attacks in Afghanistan have risen by 20% to the highest level since the 2001 U.S.-led invasion. For only the second time in 50 years, the leaders of South and North Korea met today for peace talks. At the top of their agenda, Pyongyang's dismantlement of its nuclear weaponry program. The United Nations envoy has left Myanmar after finally being allowed to meet with junta leader Senior General Than Shwe. No progress was reported in swaying the regime from a brutal government crackdown on a pro-democracy movement. In Canada, a federal judge acquitted three doctors, a Red Cross official, and a U.S. drug maker of criminally infecting Canadians with AIDS and hepatitis C contaminated blood. More than 3,000 Canadians died in the 1980s and 90s from the tainted blood. In Islamabad, opposition lawmakers resigned today. They're protesting the candidacy of Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf. In the trial of seven men who allegedly plotted to bomb landmark buildings in the U.S., including the Sears Tower in Chicago, got underway in Miami today. The prosecution says the men were trying to bring down the U.S. government. They face up to 70 years in prison if convicted. And in Minnesota, opening arguments began today in the first trial of a consumer accused of copyright violation for illegally sharing songs on a file-sharing network. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for: quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway, carmel.com.
According to a report by the Associated Press, laboratory accidents involving deadly viruses, poisonous chemicals, and contaminated animals are on the rise. The number of laboratories approved to handle deadly substances has also doubled in the last 3 years. Nokia will pay $8.1 billion to acquire digital map maker Navtech. Navtech's maps are used primarily in automobile navigation systems. eBay announced it will take a $1.43 billion charge as a result of its acquisition of internet phone company Skype. In addition, Skype's CEO will leave his active position. Sales of Fords have dropped 21% in September, while Toyota and Chrysler posted smaller drops and GM held steady. Honda, on the other hand, sales have increased more than 9% and Nissan gained 7%.
Gold is trading at $736.30 an ounce. That's down $17.80. Light sweet crude is trading at $80.05 a barrel. The Dow closed down 40 points at 14,047. The NASDAQ was up 6 points, and the S&P 500 was even. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. And we will do phones here for a while if you want. We'll go right to the phones here in a sec. I want to update you just because I feel like you... Well, dadgummit, you're deserving of the information, so, you know, I'll go ahead and do that. I mentioned what our fundraising status was last night at the somewhere along the way in the program, and told you, so here's the skinny. As of last night, after the program, we rose to, you know, it was a nice first day of the month, $250. $250 toward keeping us on the air for November. And that's wonderful. You know, that's actually 1/8 of the way. So if we could do that 7 more times, have 7 more $250 days, I can shut up and tell you that we've made the hump. So thank you to those of you who jumped in right away to make sure that this continues, through November. Bless you. To the phones we go. Juanita has been patiently waiting, and I appreciate your patience, Juanita. Thank you very kindly. How are you this evening? Juanita? Oh, yeah. There you are. Hello, Juanita? Juanita? Oh, doggone it. Juanita, are you there? Juanita? Okay, Juanita, you got to turn your radio, your computer speakers
down. Hello?
Yeah, there you are, Juanita.
Hello?
Hello?
Were you talking to me?
I was.
I can't. You're way, 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 way off.
Well, you've got your speakers on in the background there, and that's probably making part of the problem.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. How are you?
I don't know. Kind of whimsical, I guess.
Well, good, good. What's on your mind?
Now I can hear better.
Okay, great.
Yeah. A little better. I wanted to ask you a question, something about something that's been puzzling me, but before I do, I wanted to say that I believe it was last week or week before last, I got a rerun by you,
mm-hmm.
and you were talking about Kurt Vonnegut. Is that the way to pronounce his name?
Sure, Kurt Vonnegut.
And that was so good.
Well,
I
thank
just
you.
Thoroughly enjoyed that, listening to you talk about him and present some of his, some excerpts and all like that, and just really opened my eyes about the guy. And I always liked him. I always liked him on TV and everything. But it was really good. I really loved that.
Well, you know, every now and then you run across somebody who changes your world. And for me, Kurt Vonnegut was one of those people.
He sure is. And I just wanted to thank you for that. I just accidentally caught it. The question I wanted to ask, if you don't mind, is about these hearings that we've been having. For instance, when they had General Petraeus on.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here.
I barely can hear you. Anyway, they had the hearing, and they had, of course, the Code Pink people out there and all the different ones watching. And when they went to ask him questions, they didn't have him to swear in. And some of them got up and said, you know, you need to swear him in. And he had all of them arrested. And he was a Democrat.
That's true.
And then I saw, bless his heart, Senator Byrd was having a hearing, and the people were saying stuff, you know, and they really got upset when the Pace guy, you know, he's retiring, I guess, General Pace.
Well, he's not being retired so much as he's being cashiered. The Bush administration refused to renominate him after he started evincing some misgivings about the Iraq War.
Okay, I'm not really understanding you, but anyway, the Byrd, you know, was the head of it, and he got really upset with the crowd because Harkin was asking about what he had said about gays in the military, and so he had them all thrown out. But I was wondering, should that be? I mean, I don't think they were disturbing anything that much. They were, you know, am I right or wrong?
Not well, Juanita, and I hope you can hear me.
I hear you now.
Okay. Part of the problem there was that Senator Byrd fueled the fire, because on the one hand he'd sit there and he'd go into his sort of call and response old time gospel hour act, and work the crowd, and he had the crowd on his side. Well, then the crowd felt like they'd been empowered. The anti-war protesters felt like they had been empowered to share their thoughts. And then when it began to get out of his control, he turned on them.
Yeah. Well, I felt like that it was his condition too. You know, you can tell he's gone way downhill.
Oh, sure he has, and especially since it's kind of tragic. It is tragic,
his
not kind of.
Wife died.
After Irma passed away, she really was his anchor in the world.
But he didn't have him arrested, but he did have him cleared. You know,
right?
And they did that. But the other guy had him arrested. And,
well,
you know, that's when that preacher, I think, was hurt.
Right. Yeah. Well, and he didn't even get into the room.
No, he got his leg. I don't see where he did anything except say something.
No, you can watch the video. He did nothing.
Uh huh.
And he was tackled by six Capitol Police. They broke his leg in the process for literally doing nothing.
Right.
You know, the other side of that, you asked about putting people under oath. I guess I'm old school or old fashioned or anything, but any time that you're giving testimony, it would seem to me natural that you would, as a matter of course, ask the person to swear to tell the truth.
Yeah.
Or affirm to tell the truth. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just promise that they're not going to sit there and lie.
Right.
Because as it turns out, you know, from the information that we've now got, it's apparent that General Petraeus did sit there and lie like a rug.
Uh-huh.
He lied to the Congress.
Yeah.
Because
and
the information
they must have known he was going to.
Well, he's come out now. And he said, "Well, you know, I misunderestimated the violence estimates for Iraq, and it wasn't exactly like what I said." Well, that's called lying.
Well, that sounds a little Gonzalo-esque or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's what it is par for the course for anyone associated with this administration.
Oh,
that,
yeah. You can't believe a thing they say, not anything.
No, we've got a saying here in the hills: the truth ain't in them.
That's, you got that right. But and then I have heard some people saying, you know, that the continually ignoring of the protest by our side, you know, anyone on our side. People are getting fed up with it, and they're wondering if they shouldn't be civil disobedience on our side. What do you think?
I think we're moving. I mean, there's been a lot of civil disobedience already. Cindy Sheehan, people like Jim Wallace from Sojourners, willing to be arrested to express their opinion, and I think that's going to continue if we don't just fatigue on it.
I don't know about that one. Could you fill me in?
Well, I mean, the Jim Wallace and Cindy Sheehan and others have been arrested dozens of times.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, he was arrested that day too at Petraeus here.
Probably. Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't read it.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I believe
yeah.
he was.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
But you know, something's got to give. This is just getting ridiculous.
Well, it is. And, you know, there's polling data out.
Not ridiculous. It's really tragic.
Well, you're at, yes. Any word you choose to use. There's polling data out now that suggests that the American people are well and truly fed up with what's going on. And, in fact, a number of a majority of Americans are now saying that they want the war funding cut. That's news as of today. And a majority of Americans oppose giving George Bush the $190 billion that he wants to continue killing Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, I'm sure he wants it for that.
Well, you know, it's so ironic. He can't fully fund the state children's health insurance program, but on the other hand, he wants $190 billion to keep blowing the living bejesus out of Iraqis and Afghanis.
And they're also he's also wanting to get the veterans who are not service connected get their VA benefits taken away or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it was about the Petraeus hearing, and on Larry King show, this is 2 or 3 weeks ago, whenever that happened, and they had some soldiers on there that was some of our troops that were veterans against the war.
Right.
And there was this one guy, bless his heart, he got on there. It was one of those programs on CNN. It may not have been Larry King, but anyway, he got on there and he just said, well, we got this guy in the White House. This is my way I say it. I can't say his exact words, but they were so great. He said, we got this guy in the White House that he was a deserter. I mean, he just went right through it about how he deserted his place, and that went all over the world. And, you know, that's not usually allowed on the news of any kind. But that went all over the world.
We need a lot more of it to go all over the world.
Him. But I tell you, that kid, that young soldier, you could tell he's serious. And, you know, they know how to get around things. That's what they were taught, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm so frustrated.
It is frustrating, Juanita. It's nothing but frustrating. It's heartbreaking.
It is. And then this thing about Move On. They had these people on. They started from the beginning of it. The day it came out, they had these little pug nose. That's an insult to anybody that was pug nose. But anyway, these jerks from different... that was in the House of Representatives. How dare they? And they act so condescending about it. And then first news you know, here the Senate votes to, what is it? What did they
The voted to condemn the Move On ad. Oh, my. Look, that's Juanita, the Congress has no business in any of these debates. I said that last night as well. They have no business debating whether or not Rush Limbaugh is a jerk. That's something for the court of public opinion.
The one thing, though, about him, he doesn't need to be in broadcasting to our troops.
No, he doesn't. And he doesn't, and, you know, that takes taxpayer dollars to do that.
Yes. That's one thing that they could bring up.
It is indeed. Juanita, it's very good to hear from you.
You too.
You ring in.
I believe that he's really brought a lot of the hate out in this country, and he's been doing it for so long. It's so embedded.
Yeah, 25 years worth of hate and vitriol. Yes. It's absolutely disgusting.
Yes, it is.
No, but that's why the horn exists, is to try to remedy some of that.
Yes.
Well, Juanita, you take care, and I hope we'll hear from you again soon.
I'll give it a try.
Okay, take care now.
You take care, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My good friend Juanita, we're batting a million for... Florida and, 600 for Florida and 300 for California so far tonight. Let's see who we've got this time through. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. This is Gerard from Indiana.
Hey, Gerard, how are you? Haven't heard from you in a while. You doing all right?
I'm doing good. I just had a couple of things tonight. First of all, I don't want you ever to apologize for being, a little, shall we say, overboard on accuracy and language.
Okay, good. I'm glad you've got my back. Sometimes there's a little list of words that just goes through me.
Well, you know, it's we got to have a lot of people like that around, because otherwise you get to a point where you're calling mercenaries contractors. You know what I'm saying?
Isn't that the truth?
And so, you know, that's really all I have to say about that. I mean, and we've got things happening like Frank Luntz hosting presidential candidate debates. You know, it's just, sometimes you just got to stand up and say, hey, this is the way it is, and this is the way, you know, language means something.
Well, you know, it was the Republicans who gave us that well-worn phrase now, Gerard. Yeah. Words mean things.
Yep.
And if they meant something when they were attacking Bill Clinton, surely to God they still mean something now.
Yeah, they sure do. And speaking of words, listeners hear something that I was, it's kind of a personal story, but I think it applies to what's going on with the Bush administration. And maybe there are others out there who know about this and are working with this too, but maybe I'm just waking up to it. But recently, I work for a big box retailer in the Midwest here. And we're in five states, and I'm in a first level management position. And they recently restructured their management structure. And what happened was, I went from being just overnight by I went from being a salaried management person to a management person who punches a clock. And because my status was changed, it also meant that there was a change, or at least a restructure, in my health benefits. Now, when they do that, they send out to you this booklet. It's probably 20 or 30 pages long here, about, you know, the specifics of your health plan and what you know, your rights and all that is. And I was hoping maybe to catch Agnes tonight, because she might, I know she has a medical background, and she probably has some experience in this, but, you know, I'm just geeky enough to read this whole thing to find out what's in it, since it is about my health plan.
Sure.
And I read it, and there was something in here that caught my eye immediately, because I had never seen this before in other health plans that I had. And I'd like to just read it. It's just a paragraph.
Okay, go ahead.
And they're talking about what's known as the HEPA laws, who and what they can disclose your personal health information to.
Right.
And they have a section here, and there's a bullet point. There's about six bullet points here, but the heading on the section goes, "We are permitted to use or disclose PHI, personal health information, about you for the following purposes." And one of them is protective services for the president and others. We may disclose PHI about you to authorized federal officials so they may provide protection to the president, other authorized persons, or foreign heads of state, or conduct special investigations. So I'm reading this, and I had never noticed that particular clause in health benefit packages that I had before. And I'm having this kind of a, I don't know, I guess I'd call it an Andy Rooney moment, you know. And I'm thinking, why would the president need to know my health information for his own protection? And if he needs to know my personal health information for his...
Well, I can tell you how that works, if you want.
Sure.
You write a letter to George Bush. and you say, "Dear George, I hope you get hit by a truck." The Johnny on the spot Secret Service will then invoke the HEPA law, because that law has nothing to do with your privacy and everything to do with invading it. And they will then scrutinize your medical and employment records to find out if A, you drive a truck, or B, you've ever sought treatment for any form of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, they will make a determination as to whether or not you are a threat to the president. The one that scares the life out of me, though, Gerard, is that catch-all at the bottom of what you read, you know, to protect the president, foreign heads of state, yada, 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 or for any, what was that, any national security purpose?
It says, or conduct special investigations.
Okay, special investigations, right. You could drive a truck sideways through that garbage.
Yeah, easily.
You know, anything is a special investigation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say you write a letter to the editor of your local newspaper, and you sound a little bit, you know, malcontent.
Yeah, strident.
Well, you know, the FBI, and they've proven it, the Gonzalez lied about it to the Congress under oath, but then it came out that, in fact, the FBI had misused national security letters, which is what they would turn around and use in order to get at the information that they're talking about in that clause, for improper purposes. Maybe to quell dissent. Or maybe just to send you a message that, you know, you need to shut up.
Yeah.
You're not being paranoid. You're not
tasing me, huh?
I beg your pardon?
As opposed to teasing me.
Well, yeah, don't tase me, bro. But yeah, you're not being paranoid. There's nothing goofy about being afraid of that particular situation. That is creepy. That's the police state hard at work. It reminds me to a certain extent, or to one degree or another, although it's not the same thing, of the fact that it's inside No Child Left Behind that they've hidden the fact that every parent in the United States has to affirmatively opt out of having their kid hustled by military recruiters.
Mm-hmm.
You don't opt in and tell the military they can recruit your kid in high school. You have to opt out of that. That's not inside the Patriot Act. That's not inside of any sort of military defense spending bill or defense appropriations or authorization bill. That's tucked away inside of No Child's Behind Left. And it's creepy, because I would warrant that 99% of American parents out there, Gerard, who are spending day in and day out just trying to keep food on their families, they don't know it's there. So they send little Sunshine, who's a high school sophomore or junior, off to high school every day, unwittingly subjecting them to being hustled by the military to go and get thrust into the meat grinder in Iraq.
Well, and that's the thing, too, talking about language and knowing, you're talking about knowing what's in the law, what's actually in the law. And, you know, I'm kind of jokingly mentioning the student at the University of Florida, but the thing, for me, the background thing on that was so astounding in watching that video is all those students who are sitting there and are not aware of the fact that this person's rights are being violated.
Yeah.
You know, that they're not, as part of the dumbing down of America, they are not aware that there's anything out of kilter with the way that those police behave.
Well, let's take a college freshman who might have been in that room, Gerard. 18 years old, because this is the first semester. 18 years old, so that means they have not known anything but the Bush police state since roughly the time that they became self-aware at around age 11 or 12.
Yeah.
That's a sobering thought. The reason they reacted the way they did is because that's the America that they know.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't been actively taught the Constitution. They haven't been taught civics. They haven't been taught the Bill of Rights. And every time they thought about raising it, they see it getting stricken down, in, if they're politically aware, in something like the Bong Hits for Jesus case.
Right.
So, you know, there's a reason that they just stood there. That's what happens in America. People get tasered for saying the wrong thing in America. That's all they know.
Yeah.
You know, they were born, what? They were born the year of Rodney King.
Right.
Or maybe, you know, maybe they were toddlers when Rodney King went down. That is the America that they live in. You know, and it's, you know, it's understandable because I guess part of the reason I am the way I am, I'm certainly not a member of the generations who could sit in or participate in the Summer of Love or anything. I'm 44 years old. But I was a child, and I was getting images into my brain or sounds or words at a time in America when dissent flourished.
Yeah. Well, that's I'm slightly older than you, but it's you know, and that's the thing to me when I see these things happening, I think right away. I mean, the images come right away of the 68 Democratic Convention in Chicago. Of
sure.
Kent State, of, you know, all those things that happened back then.
And and somebody who was born in 1970, they were toddlers when Watergate was happening. You can't blame them for not knowing, but you can wish to God that there was some way of helping them know.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it's kind of like what I said with Juanita. It's part of the reason this exists. You know, every now and then I'll get a call from a 20-something, or, you know, we've got a couple of teenage listeners that it just thrills me to know that they're out there, because it means to me that, you know, if we can only plant one seed, if we can only plant two seeds, if we can only get two, you know, if we can only get four seeds in the ground, then maybe the Constitution has hope.
Yeah.
But right now it's pretty doggone grim, isn't it?
Yeah, seems that way. But I was listening to, actually, the rerun of, I guess it was yesterday's program, and you were talking to Phil from Florida.
Yes.
Daytona. And, you know, I think he's spot on. I mean, we just, same old thing that's been going on for the last 6 years. We just got to get out there and change it, you know. I'm a person, I'm doing what I can, like everybody else, to you know, keep the food on the table, keep the lights on. But it's going to take a lot more than that. If we're going to see this country change direction in any way.
Well, I love the passion that Phil brings to what he does, because he's out there trying to, and again, he makes a point of always saying, you know, you're not going to go broke doing this. It doesn't cost you anything to speak up. It doesn't cost you anything to exercise your right to free speech. It doesn't cost you anything to talk to your neighbor in line at the grocery store or the post office or the gas station or the Jiffy Lube or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
And it only really takes a word, like he was saying, it only really takes a word. And you might not know, you're having a conversation with a person at the gas station or the grocery store. You, in all likelihood, will probably not see the result of your speaking up and just saying something. You know, you probably, in all likelihood, may not convince them. But the next thing they hear, you know, the next image they see, you know, if they see a kid being tasered at the University of Florida, maybe some of this will, you know, maybe some of this will sink in.
It's seed work. It's seed work. It's seed planting. I don't have to win the argument. It doesn't have to be a confrontation. I'm reminded of the conversation that I had while I was down in Alabama. Like I said, I'm raised there. You know, Friday night is when you go to the football game. You go to church on Sunday, but high school football on Friday night. It's, you know, all part of the same catechism. And I had a conversation with a guy in a booster shirt afterward, and we had a great conversation and just a long, you know, talking about Rush. Mm-hmm. And I told him I mentioned the Barack the Magic Negro song, and the guy's clearly, you know, he's clearly a conservative man. There's not a lot of bleeding heart liberals in Alabama. There just aren't. I don't know why, but there aren't. And he volunteers to me, and he says, you know, I used to listen to him until the Donovan McNabb stupidity, and then I realized he was an idiot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I gave him a little bit more to go on, and mentioned a couple of other right wing talkers that I know are on the radio in that area. And I didn't need him, you know, running out the door to go register to vote as a Democrat or sign on to the Kucinich campaign.
Right.
That's a little bit much to expect.
Right. Yeah.
But I gave him something to think about the next time he punches the button on his radio and he hears that life support system for a haircut Hannity prattling away. And he'll know that he's being lied to. He'll know somewhere or another that he's being sold a bill of goods, Gerard.
Yeah. Well, I'm encouraged, too. I know that with my kids, too, that my oldest children are just getting into their 30s and sitting around at different gatherings with their friends at their house, and they, you know, they're more aware than I give them credit for. And they see these things happening, and some of them have differing opinions, but, you know, just to keep on talking and just keep those lines of communication open, I think does a world of good, and, you know, gets them to the point where they realize that there is something more than playing video games and professional sports and all the things that are used to distract the general population from what's really going on.
Well, right. As long as, I mean, you know, God forbid, I don't have anything against anybody watching a football game. I wasn't on the air Friday night, and as a consequence of that, I sat and watched my beloved Mountaineers flush their football season down the toilet. But then again, I should probably not complain to you. It's a tough year to live in South Bend, my friend. But you know, I don't begrudge anybody any of that. I don't begrudge anybody any entertainment. But it's the line. There's a line that needs to be established or drawn somewhere between reality and that.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, it's just, you know, what is entertainment and what is.
Well, you know,
it's really going to vastly affect your life for generations to come.
I clicked on my happy little homepage button, and it just, you know, I've never changed it. It just goes to some site, and bang, there it is. What's the lead story? Woman killed in Phoenix in handcuffs? No, that wasn't the lead story. The slaughter in Burma? No, sorry, that wasn't the lead story either. The lead story? Brittany loses custody. And you know, I know that Dave Letterman was a little bit harsh on Paris Hilton the other night on his show. And whether that was right or wrong, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, where do we get the idea, Gerard, that these people are any more real than a guy who actually, or woman who goes out and earns a living? You can't look at what Britney Spears did at the Video Music Awards and call that earning a living.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the cultural issue. Is somehow or another figuring out what does and does not matter. OJ doesn't matter. Britney doesn't matter. Lindsay Lohan doesn't matter. But I guess, you know, some of it ties in. Who was it? Who was the English philosopher who said that most people lead lives of quiet desperation?
That was Thoreau.
Was that
Thoreau? Henry David Thoreau.
Was that Thoreau? I thought it was an Englishman. Okay, well, I stand corrected. And Pink Floyd. Well, yeah, maybe I'm twisted by Pink Floyd, who turned that into "Hanging on in quiet desperation is the English way." But at any rate, maybe, you know, maybe it's that desperate desire to look out of our own desperate lives that that creates our fascination. And, you know, there's nothing new in it. It was the Fatty Arbuckle trial in the 20s or whatever. There's always been something to grab our attention away from what is immediately to hand. Some people drink to get away from what is immediately at hand. Other people, you know, Rush Limbaugh chewed up OxyContins to get the refreshing burst of flavor because he couldn't stand his own reality.
Well, I would have to say that's where I'm with Phil from Daytona, too, is that you know, there's a flap now because Rush said, you know, he's calling certain military people phony soldiers. Well, what, you know, it's been 20 years. What else do we expect from Rush? You know, let's not have a week of, you know, discourse and flying, you know, words flying back and forth about this. And I'm not, and I don't mean to belittle it, and what he said was appalling. But I would rather see people putting energy into getting their, you know, local state representative to their state legislature, getting someone there in there who's, you know, supportive of a liberal progressive agenda, and not worry about what Rush is saying.
But that roller coaster is already out of the station, Gerard. To the same extent that Harry Reid denounced Rush on the floor of the Senate yesterday, and Mark Udall of Colorado was said to have introduced a resolution in the House condemning him, yada, yada, yada. Well, now there's a right-wing, and I mean this guy's an uber freak, okay? Jack Kingston from Georgia has introduced a resolution commending Rush Limbaugh in the House of Representatives. So now we're going to have the battle of commendations versus commendations. Or condemnations, and what I'd really rather see is a full frontal Democratic assault with all teeth bared on the $190 billion that George Bush wants to perpetuate the ongoing slaughter of our people and Iraqi people. That's the debate we need to have in the House and the Senate, not move on, not Rush Limbaugh. That is that's beneath the dignity of the Congress, either of those issues.
The same thing happened today with a hearing with Blackwater. You know, there was so much time spent with, you know, partisan bickering back and forth. It even got to the point where, you know, there was one Republican congressman having an exchange with Henry Waxman about, okay, who brought up that Eric Prince is a, you know, has ties to the Republican Party, you know, and they're going back and forth. It's like children. You know, you have this time, you've got the witness here, you have this time, let's get as best information from him as possible to make a, some kind of discernment whether this whole mercenary scenario is going to continue to play out.
Well, Gerard, I hearken back. You talk about them acting like children. I hearken back to, you know, the bad old days of law school or whatever. You know, I'm not like Mark. I didn't go to Yale, but, you know, I went to a law school. You know, I signed up for it on the back of a matchbook one night in a drunken stupor, and the next thing you know, I'm 1L. But they teach you things like cross-examination and how to ask leading questions and how to deal with a hostile witness. You know, most of the great trial lawyers in America are liberals and Democrats. Because, right. You know, they're thinking people. I would love to see the congressional leadership on the Democratic side bring in some of these hotshot trial lawyers to just do a 7-day seminar with the Democratic members of Congress and teach them how to cross-examination a doggone witness.
Yeah. Well,
you know, never mind the statement. You know, everybody, you know, you've got X number of minutes to you've got X number of minutes to question the witness, and so you use half of that making a long, droning, boring statement. Never mind that. Don't do that. Go read some, you know, go read some Cicero. Go read some classics. Read what he did in the trial of Verus. He forewent. Is that a word? He forewent the long, droning, boring oration part of it, and just started in on the witnesses and started in on the accused and drilled him and drilled him and drilled him. Never mind the statements. You want to make a statement with the questions you're asking, because that's how you elicit the information. And then if the sucker is under oath, he's really on the hot seat, and you ask leading question after leading question after leading question, because these Bush administration freaks are all hostile witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry,
well,
I'm off my soapbox now.
Well, even one of the last congressmen, congresswomen, or congresspersons to have their turn was Congresswoman Norton from the District of Columbia, and she was the first one to bring up the word mercenary. I mean, there were at least 8 or 10 congresspeople, Democratic congresspeople that went before her, who wouldn't even bring up that word.
They're terrified, Gerard. They're afraid that somebody's going to start a campaign that says, Democrats don't support the contractors.
Yeah. Well, and the guy's sitting right there. He's sitting right there, and he says, you know, all my folks who work for my company, they all bleed red, white, and blue. And then, you know,
except
later,
the ones from El Salvador who bleed whatever flag that color is, and the ones from South Africa who are the old apartheid knee busters.
Yeah. And, you know, that's an obvious contradiction in his testimony. And, but, you know, it doesn't come out until almost the end of the hearing.
Well, it's a pity. It's a pity.
I'm
more.
Let you roll on, Bob.
All right, Gerard. I really have enjoyed our conversation. I hope we'll hear from you again soon. Okay.
Okay. Ask the right winger why the president's got to know my personal health information.
Yeah.
I'd really like to know.
That's because the terrorists hate your mama and your Bible. We'll talk to you later, Gerard.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye now.
Okay, let's roll on. I don't know who's on hold, but we're about to find out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Susan.
First of all, I'm HIPAA certified, so I know a little bit about this. Your previous caller, his medical information is private from no one in the government. The only person it's private from is him.
I know. Yeah.
If they want it for any reason, doesn't have to be a threat. You know, they could just decide, let's see what's wrong with him today.
Yeah.
They can dig it up. You know, that's written into the laws. But he can't look at his own information, which doesn't seem to make much sense to me, but then what the heck?
No, if you were having if you were going through a bad spell and you went to a counselor or a psychologist or something, try to get those records.
Oh, yeah, they can get them all.
No, but you can't.
Oh, yeah, I know. Anyway, I thought I'd call and tell you about a little incident.
Okie dokie.
I'm sitting down at the VA today while hubby's seeing the doctor.
Everything okay with hubby?
Well, other than the fact that he has cancer, sure.
I'm trying, Susan.
Yeah, I know. He's got surgery scheduled on me. He's got skin cancer. Stay out of the sun if you're smart. You'll pay for it if you don't. He's in with the doctor, and I'm sitting there, you know, trying to figure out something to do. And they came around, and here's the Oregonian, the Portland newspaper. So I get up, and I start reading. And there is this article on impeachment. Because apparently the local protesters are making one of the local congresspeople really uncomfortable. They're camping outside of his office.
Good.
With balloons and T-shirts and everything, and yelling, impeach, impeach. Anyway, these Democrats are saying, we can't impeach for the following reason.
Do I need to get my bucket?
Yeah. We can't impeach because then the GOP won't work with us anymore.
Well, we certainly need to work with the GOP, don't we? The grand old perverts.
Yeah, and I'm going, you know, right about then, I lose it right in the middle of the waiting room of the frimpin' VA hospital. And I'm going, what do you mean work with them?
We have got to have bipartisan support for these measures. We want to reach across the aisles and create a unified America and fight the divisions which we have been subjected to. We need to work together as Americans. We're all Americans. We all love our country. Here, let us reach across the aisles. What the hell? I just drew back a bloody stump.
Yeah. The Republicans are obstructing even the stuff they're in favor of.
Yeah. Sure. That's what they do. Politics is more important
than getting...
than patriotism, than country.
And I'm going, you stupid idiot. By the way, the statement was attributed to Earl Blumenauer of Oregon. Call him up and tell him he's an idiot. And then call up Nancy and tell her she has a new last name.
Which is? Come on.
Chamberlain.
Yeah, I know. I thought maybe it was going to be Nancy Capitolosi.
That's pretty good, Doc. That's really good.
Right off the cuff, Susan. You know, it's only because I'm a highly trained broadcast professional.
I couldn't believe it.
Nancy Capitolosi, though, that one's got potential.
Yeah, that does. And another reason they said that they would not impeach is because they didn't want the American public turning on them. And how many times do I have to tell you idiots, the reason the American people turned on the Republicans is because they impeached Bill Clinton and they didn't want him impeached.
Yeah, but isn't the argument then that the American people don't want George Bush impeached either?
No, the American public want him tossed out of office. We can imagine he tastes it.
Smells like a ribeye on the grill. It just makes my mouth water thinking about impeachment.
Oh, yeah. Next time we go down to the VA, I'm walking. I don't know how this is going to go over, but I'm going to march in there wearing an impeached Bush T-shirt.
Well, you know, why not?
Oh, and there is a little bit of light beginning to show. I'm going down the road last Sunday down to this local big department store. Beep, 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 beep. And lo and behold, out of the blue, here on the side of the road, where never had one before, is an anti-war demonstration.
Good. Good.
And apparently they're going to be there every Sunday. So I decided, well, come Sunday, I'm going to go down and see if they want some help.
Absolutely. Good on you. Good on you. Hey, Susan, I think I've got one more person on hold, and I'm getting all a titter about my right winger at 8:05, so, or, you know, let's see, 5:05 your time.
Oh, you got a right winger? I just came in at after 4, so this is going to be cool.
Yeah, well, I hope it is. I'm sitting here doing my internal mantra of I will not scream, I will not scream, I will not scream. Bob
Go
will not scream.
Scream.
Bob will be tranquil. Bob will be peaceful. Bob will be nice.
Go ahead and scream.
I'm going to try not to, but that's no guarantee. Hey, Susan, our best to hubby, please. Tell him we love him and we're thinking about him, and we trust that things will be well with getting that stuff excised from his hide. Having had things excised from hide, from my hide recently, I do know that it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Or the side, or the rib cage, or wherever it happens to be.
Wherever it is.
Yeah.
My best to Agnes.
All right. Thank you, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Our good friend Susan, News Ninja Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Okay, let's see if this is actually a caller. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? Anybody there? Okie dokie, you gave up. So, you know, it's about 7 minutes, 6.5 minutes before the hour. Tell you a little bit about our guest coming up. I was offered this guest. The title of the email pitching his appearance is Media Matters Attack on Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh and Others Interview Opportunity. And Mr. Jack Thomas, who coined the phrase non-normie, are you listening, Dr. Rick? I'm going to be needing you here, brother. Non-normie is a person who is fueled by anger and controlled by hate. And he has written a column about the polar left non-normie media network. Got that? And he says, earlier last week, Bill O'Reilly was castigated by Media Matters, the website that brought down Don Imus, for supposed racist comments that he made on his radio show. He was having a frank discussion about racial tension and attitudes in America, even citing his own grandmother's innate but unjustified fear of blacks. O'Reilly's guest was Juan Williams, a noted fair black commentator. Why do we have to mention that Juan Williams is black? Why does that have to be modified by the word fair? But that's me. Media Matters, who often works in conjunction with MoveOn.org and godless communist demonic baby eaters, totally distorted Bill's comments. Oh. And that distortion was subsequently picked up by CNN and reported as fact. The local ABC affiliate in New York perpetuated the fallacious story. Fallacious? Can you say fallacious in Alabama where you can't buy a sex toy? I don't know. Without checking it out. Following this, the New York Daily News, the CBS Early Show, the Chicago Sun-Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, ABCNews.com, the Louisville Journal, the Today Show, Newsday, and Stephen A. Smith of ESPN reported and perpetuated the lie. Lie? Lie? Well, you know, that's one of the things we're going to do coming up. I'm going to have a very nice, what I hope will be a very nice conversation with Mr. Thomas. And we're going to play the lie. We're going to listen to it. Unmonkeyed with, unfooled with, and we'll just find out whether or not it's as dishonest as he says. That's all I want to find out. Okay, someone has rung in. Let's see if you stayed with us. Hi, who have I got?
Jim.
Hey, Jim, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm getting ready for my right-wing interview.
Well, I wish you the very best of luck with him.
I haven't fought with a right-winger since Calvin used to call back in the bad old terrestrial radio days.
Oh, God. Well, that's going to be your cadaver for the evening. But, you know, I want to say one thing in defense of Don Imus, and I know people are going to hate me for this, and you probably might say, but I like Don Imus. And I remember that at least three out of every five broadcasts he had on his air, he was always wanting to kick George Bush's ass out of office. He constantly was railing for him to be impeached.
Well, maybe you've identified a separate and unstated reason for getting rid of him.
Well,
you know, from the other side. Maybe that's why people came together. He was too dangerous to George Bush, and at the same time, you know, the racism was more than people could stomach.
Well, that comment, I'm not going to get into that. I mean, Imus would get a little too headstrong sometimes, but I enjoyed the guy's show, and he was in many ways diverse. But in all fairness to him, I didn't agree with a lot of what he said, and I used to email him all the time, and he used to try to even made an announcement that he knew some guy somewhere that he was going to get Bo Deedle to come down there and kick my ass. But anyway, you know, Bo Deedle's that guy who was on his show all the time, who the one tough cop, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, I know.
But anyway, Imus did do, you know, he had some good reportage on there. And he did make a lot of statements that really are in parallel with what some of you and some of your people say. I kind of miss the guy in a way. I really do.
Well, what Imus did was Imus's so-called shtick. He never put himself out there as a political pundit, as O'Reilly does. And I don't think these right-wingers, because they think very much like O'Reilly does, Jim, they don't understand why a comment like, I went into Sylvia's in Harlem and it was just like any other restaurant in New York City except it was run by blacks. You know, I don't think they understand why that's disgusting.
I know.
I mean, it's like when some guy in the yachting cap at the country club looks at me and says, "Well, you know, some of my best friends are Negroes." It's demeaning. It's condescending. It's revolting.
Well, unfortunately, that's just the way Bob. That's just the way a lot of people feel. I don't know why. I don't understand it. But anyway. That's something that's going to take a long time.
We got a long way to go, Jim. We got a long way to go.
But, you know, in defense of Mr. Imus, I mean, he did have his good points. He does have his good points. I didn't like his wife too much because I thought he was still one of the pain in the rear end. But, you know, they're both trying to do some good things for kids with cancer and autism and stuff like that. and he did make a positive contribution. You know, one thing I got to say about the guy, you know, he admitted he was an alcoholic and drug addict and everything like that. He did his best he could, and he could to, in his own way, to help. Rough and crude though it may have been, he was a lot better than some of the other idiots you see on Fox News and things like that. And he always, always was sticking, kicking Fox News in the butt. Always.
Yep.
He really was.
Yeah.
I used to watch him every day, so I mean, I know where I must speak. And I'm going to give the devil his due. I don't think he's the devil, really, but I think he was a pretty good fellow.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. We're going to go to the news, and then God only knows what will happen. I may open my mouth, and bats will fly out.
Well, damn now. I don't think that'll be necessary, but you just handle him with, well, however you want to handle him.
My usual aplomb.
Right. With kids, silk stockings, and a lavalier, as Mae West used to say.
Oh, God, not Mae West. Thanks, Jim.
Bye.
Bye now. So we'll be back with Jack Thomas here in a little bit. I kid. I'm a nice guy. I've never been rude to anybody on this program that I'm aware of. So, you know, God knows what kind of information we might pull out of the situation. This is America's liberal voice. This is the media that you make. This is the horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Washington lawmakers consider a House bill that would require President Bush to show a concrete plan for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. The bill does not set a timetable for pulling troops out, and Republican leaders say they won't oppose it. The head of private security contractor Blackwater defended his staff before a House Oversight and Government Reform Committee today. He told the committee they acted appropriately at all times. His testimony comes as the FBI investigation continues into a Blackwater shootout last month in Iraq that killed 11. A Washington Post ABC News poll shows only about 25% of Americans support the administration's $190 billion war funding request. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown is visiting Iraq for the first time. He's meeting with authorities to discuss a drawdown of Britain's 5,000 troops in southern Iraq. That would have 1,000 of them home by Christmas. Violence in Iraq declined, according to a report out yesterday, but a UN report out today finds that attacks in Afghanistan have risen by 20%. They are now at the highest level since the 2001 U.S.-led invasion. For only the second time in 50 years, the leaders of South and North Korea met today for peace talks. Talks centered on Pyongyang's nuclear weaponry program and its shutdown. A United Nations envoy left Myanmar after finally being allowed to meet with the country's leader. No progress, though, was reported in swaying the regime from a brutal government crackdown on a peaceful pro-democracy movement. In Islamabad, opposition lawmakers resigned today, protesting Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf's bid for a second five-year term. Other candidates for the office also took their course to the country's case to the country's Supreme Court, asking that it disqualify Musharraf because he's chief of the country's army. In the trial of seven men who allegedly plotted to bomb landmark buildings, including the Sears Tower in Chicago, got underway in Miami today. Prosecution says the men were trying to bring down the U.S. government. They face up to 70 years in prison if convicted. In Minnesota, opening arguments began today in the first trial of a consumer accused of copyright violation for illegally sharing songs on a file-sharing network. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Do you know the expression, put on your best face? Never was that suggestion more important, especially in the increasingly fast-paced world of the Internet. The people at Byte Technology are experts in making sure that the hits their clients' websites receive turn into a satisfying visit and more business. Byte gets to the core of every business and brings the heart of the operation to the Internet. Whether you are selling products or services, reaching out for new business, or supplying information to a sector of the business community, it is vital that you attract the right visitors and deliver them what they need quickly and effectively. Byte Technology goes further, providing maintenance updates to keep your site ahead of the curve, ahead of the competition. Assure your company's future. Talk with the team at Byte Technology to learn how you can put on your best internet face. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
According to a report by the Associated Press, laboratory accidents involving deadly viruses and poisonous chemicals are on the rise. The number of laboratories approved to handle deadly substances has doubled in the last 3 years. Nokia will pay $8.1 billion to acquire digital mapmaker Navtech. Navtech's maps are used primarily in automobile navigation systems. eBay announced it will take a $1.43 billion charge as a result of its acquisition of internet phone company Skype. In addition, Skype's CEO will leave his active position. Chocolate maker Hershey named its COO to take over from its present CEO, Richard Lenny, who just announced yesterday that he would retire December 1st. Sales of Fords have dropped 21% in September, while Toyota and Chrysler posted smaller drops and GM held steady. Honda sales increased more than 9% and Nissan gained 7%. Gold is trading at $736.36 an ounce. That's down $17.80 an ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $80.05 a barrel. The Dow closed down 40 points at 14,047. The Nasdaq was up 6 and the S&P 500 was even. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com, I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
Yes, indeed. 6.5 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. This is The Horn. And we're going to go to the phone in just a minute. We're joined by a very special guest this evening. Well, at least it's evening here. It's still early afternoon on the left coast, and heaven only knows what time it is in Bombay. But you know what? That's the miracle of the internets. Nothing like being global. We're joined in just a moment by Jack Thomas. Mr. Thomas is the man who coined the phrase non-normie, and he defines that as a person who is fueled by anger and controlled by hate. He came to his conclusions after what I think could be fairly described as a life's journey, trying to work through various phases of recovery, including ongoing recovery in Al-Anon, working the 12 steps, working with his sponsor. Among other things, he's worked with Alateen and run an Alateen organization in Torrance, California for 3 years. And he's worked with a codependency recovery group. And his thesis, I suppose, would be properly stated that if stored and ungrieved, this is information that was provided to me by his publicist, if stored and ungrieved, unprocessed anger was the basis for people becoming emotionally non-normal, why would they cling to it if it was destroying them psychologically? The answer Mr. Thomas found after years of probing the hidden agendas and psyches, of thousands of emotionally non-normal people that he encountered. And he, Mr. Thomas now defines various and sundry groups, peoples, philosophies, thought processes as normie versus non-normie. He has a website. I believe, Mr. Thomas, unless I am mistaken, it is nonnormie.com. Is that correct?
That's correct, Bob.
Mr. Thomas, thank you very much for taking time to join us this evening. Of course, we're discussing this evening your writings regarding the current controversy regarding remarks primarily by Bill O'Reilly and, I guess, ancillarily by Rush Limbaugh. You take the position, do you not, that they are being unfairly treated in the American media?
Yeah, yes, I do, Bob. What I think is they've been blown up out of proportion. I listened to both people, you know, in the broadcast that they did, and I listened to the entire context of it, and I really do think that it's merely a gotcha mentality with these people, that they're hanging on to a little part of it, and they're blowing it out of proportion.
Okay, I think that establishes the ground for our conversation. Let's back up then a little bit and talk about these definitive terms that you've developed, normie versus non-normie. Can you give us a little bit of background on that, please?
Sure, I can, Bob. And first of all, the term normie comes directly out of Alcoholics Anonymous. They refer to everyone who's outside of the program, who doesn't need the program, as a normie. And how the term non-normie came about was, I was talking to an alcoholic one time during the break, and I was asking him what the term meant, and he was explaining it to me, and I said, well, you know, I hate to tell you this, but by inference, then that makes all of us guys in here in the program non-normies. And he kind of laughed and said, I guess you're right. And the term stuck as a result of that conversation. So when I developed my program later on, after working with these people for about 18 years, you know, I always kid around. I said that I've been working with the people in AA and Al-Anon and Alateen for 1 year longer than Robert Stroud, the Birdman Alcatraz, did at Alcatraz studying canaries. And he came up with some pretty interesting research, and I think I have too. And one of the things that I found when we peeled away all the emotional layers, I don't care whether a person was addicted to alcohol or obsessions or whatever the case may be, if they were emotionally non-normal, when we peeled back the layers, we always found the same problem, and that is the storage of anger ever since youth, and usually starting in their dysfunctional family when they were about 8 years of age.
Now, you've taken that concept of, and you've expanded it, I guess, what would we say, socioculturally?
Yeah, let me explain that real quickly. Tracking the people and the results of the dysfunction, I find that they'll do one of two things with the anger. You know, when you start storing anger, you know, the psyche, Bob, is not a bottomless pit for storing it. So what happens a lot of times, and this is one of the reasons why we have such a tremendous drug problem right now in the high schools, is they get to high school and they've got this agony that they're in from all of this stored anger. In fact, one of the things we used to do in Alateen was to help them get rid of it through working the 12 steps. But those that don't, they either do one of two things. They either self-medicate, that's your alcohol, your drugs, your sex, or else they displace it in some way. And I always use the five C's, and that's the crutches, the cults, the crime, crises, and causes. And cause is the one that I center on, you know, a lot of times in my website, because an awful lot of the people, and I'm sure you've seen them out on the picket line, you know, protesting this, that, or the other, they're very angry people, and they're displacing their rage with these icons that they've created in which to vent it on.
So, now, in this column that I have in front of me that was provided by your publicist, you make a note that polar left non-normies have mass infiltrated the major concentrations of power in America, including but not limited to the Democrat Party, the media, the public schools, psychology, the colleges, the legal profession, and especially the courts. That's a pretty broad, sweeping indictment, Mr. Thomas.
You're right, Bob, and it is very broad. I am prepared to defend it, but, you know, one of the things you remember now, it wasn't that long ago, back in the 1920s, when we just had the reverse. Polar right was in charge of this country. And, you know, you had the Ku Klux Klan parading down Pennsylvania Avenue and being applauded. You know, we had more polar rights controlling this country, and the ACLU, for example, was just coming into being in 1917 and was essentially, when it first started out, very tainted, you know, with communist sympathizers, and so as a result, they didn't have the world's greatest reputation. And so what happened was is that the polar right eventually got castigated and marginalized out to the fringes. Now the only time you see them is out here with the skinheads and in some of the radical cult groups, like the Davidian, the Branch Davidian cult, and things like that. But you don't see them so much in politics anymore, and you sure don't see them in the media at all.
Well, let me. There are a million places I want to go with this conversation, Mr. Thomas.
Yeah.
Let me. First of all, you listed that the courts, the schools, yada yada. Can we not also include religion in there?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But you're going to find more polar right there than polar left.
Well, okay, okay. So that's your distinction.
What's that?
That's your distinction: polar left versus polar right.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. And so religion is, you know, especially in the cults or the aberrant religions, the ones that require a charismatic leader, you know, with the full devotion to, you know, the Jim Jones type.
Or a Falwell or a Robertson. Yeah, that, yeah. The cult leaders.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, let me ask you this. There's a statement you refer to, and I gotta admit, I was taken a bit aback by this. You refer to Rush Limbaugh in your column and Bill O'Reilly as normies. Now, on the one hand, you've got Rush Limbaugh, who, under the best of circumstances, is a recovering street drug addict, and Bill O'Reilly, who, you know, in verified, documented, sworn-to court papers, tried to come on to a woman by suggesting that he wanted to use falafel to have sex with her.
Yeah, of course. That was not a proven charge. You know, that was a sworn statement.
He settled out of court over it, and he didn't take it to trial. He didn't challenge it.
Yeah, I know, but I, you know, we don't have enough information on that to really go. We have to take him on face value. And, you know, and a lot of the times, you know, when you have people, you know, that have hidden or hypocritical stances, there's no way to judge them. We base it on the face value that we see on television and everything else.
But even Rush Limbaugh admitted that he was a drug addict. How can you call him a normie?
Well, for one thing, you know, remember something. We're dealing with painkiller drugs, which are a lot different than what we're dealing with crack cocaine, you know. And so as a result of that, he got addicted to something for relieving pain. And a lot of people have that are not what you call your typical addicts. I'm not trying to defend Rush's use of drugs, believe me. I think that it's a terrible thing. But what I'm saying is that I've tested him, you know, on my non-normie test, and he comes around in the teens, and which is a good score.
Okay, well, let's go to the issue with regard to Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
You have asserted that he was taken out of context.
Yeah, exactly. I listened to that, right? Did you listen to it, by the way?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did. And I have the audio right here, so if you don't mind, let's go through it. Let me check real quick. It's a minute and 7 seconds long, so it won't take too awfully long, okay?
Yeah, that's okay. I've heard it about 20 times.
If you want me to pause it, just say so along the way, and I'll do it.
No problem. Go.
Okay, here we go.
I think it's getting better. I think black Americans are starting to think more and more for themselves, and they're getting away from the Sharptons and the Jacksons and the people trying to lead them into a race based culture.
Okay, let's stop there for just a second, Mr. Mm-hmm. Thomas. That everyone else is focusing on the comment about Sylvia's in Harlem.
I know. Yeah,
but that front end comment is a little bit disturbing too, because when he says they're beginning to think for themselves, isn't there an assumption in there that at some point in the past, or apparently based on this conversation in the recent past, that African Americans either don't or are incapable of thinking for themselves politically?
Well, he was referring specifically to Sharpton and Jackson, and you know, the leadership, you know, the self-appointed leadership that has so dominated the black culture right now, and you know, there are many people you know, throughout the country, you know, notable people that like Walter Williams, for example, and David and Mr. Soul, who dispute that, but unfortunately they do control a lot of power, and I think that's what he was referring to in the context of his thing.
Well, I'm reminded of a printed statement that came out from Ron Paul some several years back and this was just a light that went on for me when I heard that. Where Ron Paul said that only about 5% of African Americans in this country are politically sensible.
Well, I don't put me in a position of defending Ron Paul. I certainly wouldn't do that.
Okay, but it struck me as being somewhat similar, but let's go on.
Sure.
You know, I was trying to figure it out. Look, I can make it. If I work hard, get educated, I can make it. You know, I was up in Harlem a few weeks ago, and I actually had dinner with Al Sharpton, who is a very, very interesting guy. And he comes on a Factor a lot, and then I treated him to dinner because he's made himself available to us, and I felt that I wanted to take him up there, and we went to Sylvia's, a very famous restaurant in Harlem. I had a great time. And all people up there, tremendously respectful. They all watched the Factor. You know, when Sharpton and I walked in, it was like big commotion and everything, but everybody was very nice. And I couldn't get over the fact that there was no difference between Sylvia's restaurant and any other restaurant in New York City. I mean, it was exactly the same. Even though it's run by blacks, primarily black patronship, it was the same. And that's really what the society is all about now here in the USA. There's no difference. There's no difference.
Okay, that's I didn't. I assure you, Mr. Thomas, I didn't monkey with that audio. I didn't do anything to it.
No, I believe you.
That's not out of context. That is really, really, really what he said.
Yeah, I know.
How is that not reprehensible?
Well, first of all, number one is that, you know, consider the fact that Bill O'Reilly, you know, goes out of his way to have black guests. He continuously has Juan Williams, Al Sharpton, and recently had Jesse Jackson on. And then consider the fact also of who is dominantly his audience. His audience is practically all white. He's speaking to whites, and there's something that was left out of this conversation, by the way, I want to insert it here, is this story of his grandmother. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did. I didn't want to take 10 minutes running the audio, but he talks about how his grandmother was afraid of black people.
Exactly. And so what you have to do is you have to take this entire conversation in context, and he's talking to white America, and he's saying to them, in essence, all the fears that you have, all the fears like my grandmother that you have, are not real. They're in your head. And so it may sound bad, for example, to someone who is, say, taking a different position than Bill. But if you look at it in the context of his audience, it's really not as bad. And even Juan Williams said that. He asked Juan on that specifically, and Juan agreed with him.
So I understand your point. O'Reilly's demographic is high 60s, 70s, 80-year-old Americans. And he's trying to, well, it's like putting a little wet tobacco on a bee sting and trying to pull the sting out.
Yeah, he's trying to alleviate their fears.
But by the same token, then, while that may be his demographic, Mr. Thomas, the people out here who aren't part of that demographic, who aren't walking around America terrified of the Negro, can you see where that is, where it's offensive in the extreme, or condescending, or patronizing?
Well, let me give you a quote from Jesse Jackson, for example. When Jesse's not on the air and he's out speaking at high school, he talks to his black audience and he says, now, if you're on a dark street and you hear footsteps behind you and you get worried and you turn around and you see that it's white people coming up and they're holding a Bible in their hands, don't you feel a little sense of relief rather than having about three or four black guys that look like they're from the hood? And they all agree. Now, he would never say that publicly, but he's been quoted in his high school talks talking that way. Don't you think that's a little condescending?
But again, isn't he speaking to his own audience?
Yes, and so is Bill. That's what my point.
So we can castigate Jesse Jackson and Bill O'Reilly equally and call them for their patronizing or condescending comments with regard to the greater picture of society as a whole.
No, I don't really believe that. See, the whole problem is we don't have enough discussion of race that's open. And if we had more of it, we would probably be a lot closer together. The trouble is whites right now, and I'm sure Bill O'Reilly's now one of them, is more and more afraid to discuss it because they get pounced on. Slightest infraction.
Is it possible that that's not a discussion that Bill O'Reilly can lead?
Well, It's got to be done somewhere, and it's got to be done everywhere. It's not like it's his job. The point is it's everybody's job. It's my job. It's your job. It's his job.
I understand your position, Mr. Thomas, but I'm having a little bit of a hard time with it. Whether it's the I was it was just like any normal restaurant, except it was run by black people, or whether it's Rush Limbaugh getting on the air on the public airwaves and telling an African American caller to call me back when you get the bone out of your nose. I'm sorry,
I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh yes. And that's
not a part of my article.
No. I'm just these are simply examples because I catalog this kind of thing. Rush Limbaugh asking why wanted posters in the post office all look like Jesse Jackson.
I have not heard any of those, but you know, so I'd much rather stick with what I do know.
Well, sure, I understand that, but I think what I'm trying to establish is that there is a greater there's a greater spectrum or panoply, if you will, of the right wing race comments that have a greater context. You know, you talk about taking things out of context. This is the context in which they exist.
Yeah, but Bob, remember one thing. You don't hear the black outrage on this thing that you heard with Don Imus. You know, have you heard Al Sharpton, for example, out with a megaphone picketing in front of O'Reilly's studio? It's just not happening. Most of the outrage is coming from the white America.
Okay, so, and I assume that it's your position that's white liberal America.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of going without saying. And so what I'm saying is that I think that white liberal America is trying to be sensitive for the blacks when they're not bothered by it as much as you think they should be.
Okay. We've got African American callers to this program, and I've gotten the emails and the.
No, I'm talking about the public personas. I'm talking about the Jesse Jacksons, the Al Sharptons, the usual suspects. You know that brought Don Imus down. You know, after Media Matters. Revealed it.
And I take it that you really do have a problem with Media Matters.
Well, Media Matters, for example, the major problem I have is that they have so many distortions that I've tracked over the years. Some of the stuff is pretty good, but they do have a tendency, you know, and I find them very anger-based, and that's the reason why I refer to them as non-normies, because all non-normies are very anger-based. This is how they displace their rage, but with going after things outside of themselves.
Well, in light of the fact that there is no outlet on terrestrial radio, we operate on the internet because, frankly, media ownership is such that a liberal progressive program cannot get a foothold in terrestrial radio. As a liberal and a progressive, I understand the anger because we have been vilified and castigated by the right wing people like Limbaugh for going on 25 years now. I mean, you've got people like Glenn Beck, who's, and I know it's not part of the article, so, but this is just the general discussion. You've got people like Glenn Beck who refers to Mrs. John Edwards as a prostitute and her illness as a prostitute to Senator Edwards. The list is almost endless.
You're never going to get me defending that type of comment.
But this is the.
I don't like bad comments on either side of the aisle.
But what I'm trying to get to, Mr. Thomas, is that there is a disparity. You have identified what you define as a great deal of anger coming from an organization like Media Matters, but there's a 25-year history of anger and hate and vitriol that pours out on almost a 24-hour-a-day basis from the right wing.
Well, yeah, are you referring to Glenn Beck?
Well, whether it's Glenn Beck, it's Limbaugh, it's O'Reilly, it's Hannity.
I've never really heard Rush come from an anger base. I've heard him use a lot of sarcasm, but I haven't. I don't hear any anger. You know,
well, with regard to the phony soldiers comment, I've got the audio of that too.
When he's talking about the issues, I'm not talking about a response to an attack. You know, obviously anybody's going to be angry on that.
But he went to his website, edited his comments out so his readers wouldn't see it, and then edited the audio on his website as well. That's dishonest.
Well, I can honestly say that I have no, you know, privilege in that particular arena. I don't know.
So you and I take it from the sound of things that you're a fairly conservative individual. I'm a very, very liberal individual. I'm very progressive. You and I aren't screaming at each other.
And I'm not that type of person either.
So, you know, the dialogue can be had. But the thing is, there is poison. And you know, you use the normie versus non-normie dichotomy. I just call it poison in the American body politic. And so, you know, as you look at what you identify as left-wing or non-normie anger, Mr. Thomas, I would like to hope that out of a sense of you know, intellectual honesty and curiosity, you might go back and examine the hate and vitriol that has poured out of the right wing for 25 years.
Well, actually, I do write a lot of articles on the polar right, too, as a matter of fact. And like I say, I find most of them in religion. You know, it wasn't that long ago I was writing about our good friend, polar right Reverend Fred Phelps, up here in Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka, Kansas. And also, you know, but on the other hand, I wrote about Michael Berg, the father of decapitated journalist Nick Berg. You know, mm-hmm. he wanted to have a coffee and tea with the people that killed his son. You know, I mean, those are two extremes that I talk about a great deal on nonnormie.com, because you know what we're lacking in those areas is common sense, and common sense is usually where normality is.
And normality, it's not subject to a concrete definition, is it?
Well, you know, the one thing that I have been able to do is I've been able to define just about everything that I do. And what I do is I say that a non-normie is an emotionally driven person. A normie is a non-emotionally driven person.
In a way, you could go back to the ancient Greek dichotomy between the Apollonians and the Dionysians then. Because the Apollonians were very cold and very rational and very reasonable, versus the Dionysians, who were driven by emotion, by religious fervor, that kind of thing.
The main thing, you know, here is which comes first, are the emotions subjugated to the brain, or is it vice versa? In fact, that's one of the things we run into in AA and Al-Anon and Alateen all the time, is we're dealing with people that got into trouble originally because their emotions were driving their entire psyche.
What happens when a rational response engenders profound emotional response?
You just hit it right there. The thinking came first, right? That's what's supposed to happen. We're supposed to be able to curb our emotions and circle them around our thinking, not the other way around.
Just by example, and I know we run over a little bit, but I'm enjoying the conversation. I hope you are as well. When you look at something like children blown into their constituent parts in Iraq.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
When you look at something like children being blown up in Iraq in bombing raids and things like that, and it appeals to you on a visceral level, and you try to respond to it rationally, reasonably, and you say, you know, that obviously this is evil.
This is
bad.
Exactly. You know, in fact, you hit on a point that I meant to mention earlier, if I could bring it up right now. The only cure for this is grieving. It's a lost art, you know, in society today. And we teach this in Alateen, is teach the kids how to grieve their losses, because it's the reaction to loss and disappointment through anger that caused the problem to begin with. So we teach them how to grieve.
Okay, and I've got no argument with that whatsoever. The question becomes one of, however, when people who say, you know, go to a protest to protest the Iraq War because of the massive human tragedy that's involved, because it's a rational, it's a reasonable, intellectual understanding of what has happened, and they are they're opposed by people who say you hate America. Or, you know, move to Iraq, or America, love it or leave it, or you don't support the troops. That engenders anger, doesn't it? I mean, it would...
Well, yes, Bob, but I'm not going to broad brush every single person on the protest line, but you know as well as I do the type of people I'm talking about within the protest. You have some very, very intellectually sound people that are not non-normies out protesting various causes. But you see, there's a difference between the person who is emotionally driven. because their thinking does not come first. It comes secondary. And when you have a conversation with them, they usually talk in bumper sticker language.
Okay. I'm on the air 3 hours a night, five nights a week, and I can tell you that I try to remain cool and rational, and there are times that I just want to shut the microphone off and weep because of the things that I see. And,
I understand.
And I can't define myself as being somehow socioculturally or psychologically aberrant for what I think is a rational response to a horrible and irrational situation.
Well, we're not here to diagnose you, Bob. That's for sure.
This is a 3-hour couch, five nights a week. I get as much from my audience as they get from me. Trust me. But Mr. Thomas, I've enjoyed our conversation. I hope you'd be comfortable coming.
I too, Bob.
I hope you'd be comfortable coming back sometime, and I wish you the very best.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for inviting me.
My pleasure. And give our best to Dale, please.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Jack Thomas of nonnormie.com. Wow. A couple of folks on the line here. Let's just go straight to one of them. Hi, who have I got?
Oh, hi, Bob. Joe Vecchio.
Hey, Joe.
Fine. How are you?
I'm okay. How about you?
Okay. Well, I just came back from job search a little while ago. So I thought I'd give you a call and see how things were going. I assume Agnes is busy with the kids.
Yeah, she's being mom.
She's being mom, which is the most important thing a person can do.
We're liberals with family values, Joe. What can I say?
Liberals with family, exactly right. How many wives has Bill Clinton had?
That would be one.
That would be one. How many wives does Rudy Giuliani have?
I'll have to take off my shoes to get past 10. Is he on 4 or 3? I don't know.
He's on his third now. Rush Limbaugh is on his third, or did he just divorce his third? It's hard for me.
Yeah, the third was divorced, and right.
But you know, there is a real reason I called tonight, is that I have some apologies to make, and I would like to make them.
Well, I don't know that you do, but if you feel you must, you must.
Well, in light of Rush Limbaugh's apology, quote unquote, for saying about phony soldiers, I felt some apologies of my own were in order. So if it's okay with you,
okay,
I would very much like to make these apologies.
Absolutely.
And these apologies are for the following people: there to those who gave their lives throughout this country's history for the cause of freedom, to those soldiers currently serving in combat and in support missions in Iraq, Afghanistan, and all over the world, to the people of Iraq and Afghanistan, most of whom, until we invaded, never had any animosity towards us in particular, Americans in general, and who really want nothing more out of life than to support themselves and leave a better world for their children, much like everyone else in the world, and to the future generations who will have to pay the price for the actions of the United States government, I apologize to you. I apologize to you on behalf of President George W. Bush and Vice President Richard Cheney, who were the ones primarily responsible for you being where you are today, cowardly men who decided to take us to war for reasons of their own, yet when the time came for them to sacrifice, they found better things to do. I apologize to you on behalf of the leadership of the Republican Party and their primary financial backers, who exploited your sense of duty, of loyalty, and patriotism, and used it to increase their profits or to further their own ambitions, and put the success of their political party and corporations ahead of your safety and well-being. I apologize to you on behalf of the college Republicans, phony patriots who should be there fighting with you so they could learn firsthand how horrible war is and why it should never be rushed into, but who instead have chosen to let you fight their battles while they plan their futures. To quote a soldier from another war, it's their guts and your blood. I apologize to you on behalf of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Neil Bortz, Ann Coulter, and many other media figures who have profited greatly from this war and who claim to support you and who also have never served or never had a desire to serve and who will ruthlessly attack even the most dedicated veterans who dare to say that you should not fight or die for their vanity. I apologize to you on behalf of the Washington Press Corps, in particular for the professional media in general, who saw this war as a way to advance their own careers and therefore never challenged the real reasons for this war, whatever they may be, or the competence of those who sent you there, and who would rather distract us with stories about the assorted doings of rich, pampered celebrities than dare to admit how wrong they've been. I apologize to you on behalf of the leadership of the Democratic Party, who, for whatever reason, are doing you a disservice by capitulating to the warmongers and cheerleaders, even when they have it within their power to bring you home or to bring to justice those that wrongly sent you into war. And finally, I apologize to you on behalf of the American people, because in the end, the actions of our government are our responsibility, and we did not do enough to stop this when we could. I hope that you will find it in your hearts to forgive us, because it's we who have failed you. Sincerely, Joe Vecchio.
Bless your heart. I'm glad you've got that printed out, because that needs to go up.
Yeah, it is. It's on my blog right now.
Beautiful. I'm sure I will
send it to the head-on.
Yeah, I'm sure one of the news ninjas will pick it up and put it online for you.
Yeah. So, but I felt that was important in light of, because I don't know if you heard Russia's apology.
To be honest, I didn't. No, but I'm sure it was an apology like no other, to say the
yeah,
least.
Exactly. So, but I felt that was very important to say, and then I wanted to, let everybody know how I felt.
Good job.
I would have done a little earlier today, but I had to go out and look for a job.
Yeah, I know how that goes. I mean, any luck?
Well, I got some good leads. There's a company called Rosetta Stone that sells language software and kiosks in malls, and it doesn't sound like good, but the money's pretty good. So.
Well, great. You know,
product. So it's something I could.
And sell. You know, maybe in the course of that, you could get an employee discount on Linear A.
Sure, why not?
Or
actually, what I plan on doing is making use of the software, because according to a friend of mine who used to work there, they will allow you to have a copy of it. It's like $300 for the software. Language. It's teaching how to do different languages. And
right.
I want to have a better understanding of Japanese, because I think in the future what I'd like to do is get some sort of degree, any kind of 2-year degree perhaps, and then go to Japan and teach English. Live there and teach English.
That would be exciting. We've got a listener over there, our good friend Robert. Who does something maybe exactly that, or at least something very, very similar.
Oh, sure. And there's a good friend from the Bart Cop chat room named Tim Wiederquist, who sometimes comes out here to Chicago. He's got family out here, who also teaches in Japan. He says it's great. And, having lived there, I know what a wonderful country it is. And, it's peaceful, although it may not be any safer than any place else in the world, considering all the insanity that's going on.
Well, the chat room is making mention, our good friend on the road, is saying that Rosetta Stone is actually quite a good product.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I would never sell something that I didn't really support. But a friend of mine who used to work for them said it is a good product, and they're a good company, and they pay decent commissions. So I should be able to make decent money with them.
And if you've used the product, that'll make you that much a better salesman.
That's right. That's going to be a sign. Here's this little short, dumpy Italian guy speaking, fairly good Japanese. And I already speak a little bit. I learned survival Japanese, the important stuff. Where's the bathroom? How much is this? Give me all your money. The important thing.
Yeah. Please don't use the samurai sword on me. Yeah.
Don't kill me today.
Right.
Take all my money. I'm only a foreigner.
My mother thinks I'm a piano player in a whorehouse.
I'm sorry I didn't come in earlier to listen to what you had to say, so I don't know if I'm changing.
Well, no, I'm going to go to a call here in a minute and probably address the issue. We were just talking to a right-winger.
Okay.
And I didn't scream or anything. I was a very good boy, Joe. You'd be proud of me.
Was he a generally nice right-winger, or was he an annoying?
Well, he was genial, but he thinks Bill O'Reilly's getting a raw deal.
Bill O'Reilly is a raw deal.
Try the veal. He'll be here all week. Joe, let's do a little program note, if you don't mind. You have taken a brief hiatus from the Cup of Joe radio show while you pursue your employment activities.
Yeah.
But that's not a permanent thing, and we will be looking for your return. And what we're going to do, we can go ahead and tell people, we're gonna do a little shuffle in the schedule. And we're going to become, for the most part, as far as live programming is concerned, a nighttime radio network.
I think that's really good.
So at some point in the future, you and John Fox will be following Peter Godbold.
Right. And I'm actually looking forward to that. Daytime audience is great, and while I appreciate the fact that Internet radio is definitely going to be the future of radio, at present, morning is really still more for broadcast, so people can listen in their workplace and in their cars.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to an evening show where I have I can have a bit more of an audience.
Good deal. Well, Joe, chime in anytime.
No problem, Bob. I just wanted to get that apology in, and I want to let people know that. And you know, I really am. You know, it seems like it's a tongue-in-cheek thing, but I really am.
No, there was a hell of a lot of truth in what you said there.
I am sorry that these people have to go out there and you know, deal with the Iraqi summer in body armor when they have armor, and fight and die just you know, so a bunch of old white guys basically can pretend like they're old tough soldiers. You know, and it's a damn shame. It should never happen, and we should have done more to prevent it.
Yeah, it reminds what's that? That reminds me of that line from what Don Henley's "The End of the Innocents" for this tired old man that we elected king.
Yeah,
he was talking about Reagan at the time, but it really hasn't changed, has it?
No, it hasn't. And you know, and in fact, thinking of another great political song for 08, you know, to me, the way things are going, it just seems to me the new boss same as the old boss, because I don't see anything changing regardless who wins in 2008.
That's kind of sad.
It is kind of sad, and that's the deal that we've gotten ourselves into. So.
All right, well,
listen,
Joe, best of luck. I hope the Rosetta Stone thing works out. I think you'll dig it, if what I'm seeing in the chat room is any indication.
That wasn't the only place I went to today. I went several places downtown, so I'm kicking ass, taking names, and hopefully I'll get something soon.
You know, I got to tell you, I know there's and I know you don't drink or anything, but there's a trend in bars toward having women bartenders, but, man, you would be the classic bartender in the corner bar, especially in a place
drink.
Like Chicago. You don't have to drink. Look, you don't want the bartender drunk.
I see. So they want somebody who doesn't drink as a bartender.
Yeah, and a guy who can carry on a conversation, mix drinks, and keep the clientele drinking.
Until I start throwing glasses at the Republican.
Well, yeah, there's that. Joe, take care, my brother.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And we've got Kevin calling from D.C. Kevin, welcome to the program. Kevin? Kevin, tell me you didn't quit on me, buddy. Kevin, we've got Kevin. He's singing again. No, don't do it. Kevin! Oh, rat. Doggone it. I hate it when I lose callers. Well, there you have it. Your take on Mr. Thomas? We've got about 10 minutes left or so. If you want to chime in on this, my favorite line so far is what I saw. I think our good friend Peter Godbold alluded to it in the chat room. Normal is a setting on a dryer, and that's about it. Amen. Let's see. Who have I got?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah, I lost you. I just dialed and hung up quick. Tell Joe, by all means, go get that degree and get out of this country and learn Japanese. Pretty much, I have that same ambition, too, you know.
Okay.
If he's out there listening, which I hope he is.
Well, I assume that you heard the biggest part of my conversation with Mr. Thomas.
Oh, yeah, and I want to comment on that, and I want to comment actually two things in the time that we have. As far as Mr. Thomas go, for one thing, I'm pretty impressed that he didn't come off like a, you know, as you would so eloquently say, like a crazy as a sprayed cockroach.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty... and. You know, that gives me some hope that, you know, you can have total opposite ends of the spectrum and have a civil conversation.
Oh, I'm a civil guy.
Civility has disappeared in our society over the past 20-some-odd years. You know. Even though I just totally disagree with him.
Right. Well, I didn't figure you were quite on the same page there in the choir.
Basically, it all boils down to...
Let me ask you real quick, because you have alluded on the program from time to time. You know, you're of African American extraction. Does he have a point about that somehow O'Reilly, you know, it's not fair to criticize O'Reilly because he didn't mean to be saying it to all of America, just the terrified 60, 70, and 80 year olds in his demographic?
I just think O'Reilly is just, again, like, I would say a good portion of white America is very uncomfortable with the fact of the matter that for the past 500 years, people of color, particularly people of the African diaspora, have basically been disrespected as human beings. And the reality is, and the reason why I say disrespect, and it all comes down to that, is that our labor is not as valued in the form of the double standards that go on in the corporate you know, in the corporate arena, and the fact that, you know, black males get 70 cents for every dollar that a white male makes on any given job. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And other things. Look at our justice system. You know, the Genesis 6 is, you know, a prime example of that, where basically, you know, this kid, this kid who, you know, has ginned up on racism because he comes from northern Louisiana, put nooses around the tree and, you know, did something sarcastic. Of course, in the teenage world, he can expect a butt kicking. It all boils down to that. And they're gonna, you know, put them for the full extent of the law and try them as adults.
Well, especially in light of the fact that the principal suspended the noose hangers, and then the suspension was overturned by the Board of Education, who said it was just a prank.
Yeah, and not to mention, you know, this could have all been handled by the principal. And it should have ended and began right there. He should have been the ultimate authority, but...
Well, there's... Yeah, and there's background to it, too. You know, the whole thing starts when the African-American students go very politely to the principal and say, can we please sit under the whites-only tree?
Exactly.
At that point in time, bells and whistles and alarms and sirens and flashing lights should have gone off around the principal, at which point, maybe, you know, maybe it was his first year at Gina High School, and he says, huh? There's a whites-only tree? And that's where the principal gets a chainsaw and goes out and saws down the whites-only tree, or puts people-only under it.
Innocent tree for... stupidity of humanity.
Right, I know, but you see what I'm saying. You know, you respond to that. You don't wait for it to become a whites-only tree.
Yeah, well, that's...
Oh, by the way, Kevin, I'm getting a question out of the chat room here, and I don't know if you are or aren't. Are you the Kevin that people hear calling the Stephanie Miller Show?
No.
Okay. Okay, I just have to stay out of trouble in the chat room. Okay.
Okay. But I just feel, and here's another example. The incident that happened in at Duke University, the lacrosse team.
Sure.
Okay, had it been, the roles were reversed. Say it had been like a poor white girl with a bunch of
the
Duke basketball team. Would they have been apologetic and ready to redeem them?
Well, there's a shade of difference, and I don't mean shade, but there's a little bit of difference in that in regard to whether they are black or white. They are high power athletes on an extremely powerful intercollegiate athletic team. They would have made bail. If, however, it was the Duke Lacrosse Club, and the Duke Lacrosse Club was made up primarily of African American young men, and it was a poor white girl, you know, a male or Ewell, if you will, those guys still would not have made bail.
Exactly. And I think, you know, you got to look at the double standards across the line on any given... Because, yes, you know, this country has progressed where, yes, there can be black players on the lacrosse team. Hell, my former university, City College, has a lacrosse team. And it would consider mostly people of color. You know, they're nowhere near on the level as Duke and John Hopkins, but the fact that...
Yeah,
an urban university has a lacrosse team is saying.
Now, when City University gets a hockey team, and
we have that too.
Okay. What I get for trying to be a smart aleck.
No, but you know, anyhow, like me personally, I just come to the fact that, you know, I need to go back to the country of my ancestry, which is Jamaica, the West Indies, if I'm going to live as a first-class citizen. I've given up on trying to achieve that. And frankly, me personally, the Genesis 6 and whatever race issues that go on in this country, technically, for me now, it's no longer my fight. You know, it really
is. That is a profound statement, Kevin.
I've come to that conclusion. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, that I've sought, because I have a lot of relatives still back home, that you know, I'm seeking to get get a dual citizenship for now, because I feel like I still have a lot of work to do here. And you know, the conversation you and I are having this weekend is part of it, but I'm seeking ultimately to repatriate myself and my wife, hopefully, if she chooses to join me, back in Jamaica, the country of my ancestors.
Well, you will have to hook up internet telephony when you do, Kevin, so we can continue.
Just think, you know, I've lost all hope for this country, and it's with great difficulty because
you're not the only one. And it's for what it's worth, it's not that part is not race based, because I'm hearing from tons of people, black, white, Asian, whatever, that is their sensation, that it's over. It's done.
The experiment is over. You know, the fact that we're having an election 2 years before the actual date, you know, it's pretty much, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty much. The fact that, you know, I really have, come to terms that I will always be a second-class citizen in this country, and regardless of whatever I say, do, or accomplish, I'm going to be considered not as intelligent.
And nothing will change it.
And nothing is going to change. You know, after my exploration throughout the Midwest, I've come to that, and I've come to that willful ignorance that I would say 75% of America wants to have.
If.
And going on that, if you'll indulge me for the next 3 minutes.
Well, I'm out of time, Kevin. Can we carry this over perhaps to a conversation tomorrow night?
Sure, sure.
Okay, I appreciate it. I'm terribly sorry. Thank you very kindly, Kevin.
Okay.
You have a great night.
Fine.
Bye now.
Fine.
And we'll try to wedge one more call in here, if indeed this is a caller who's still with us. Who have I got?
Hey, this is Chris, Bob.
Hey, Chris. A couple of minutes. Hit it and auctioneer it.
The Blackwater militia that opens fire first without questions or anything, are they non-normies?
No, they're normies who were taken out of context, Chris.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to clear that up right quick.
Jesus, I can count on you.
I've been wondering about that all day. Blackwater, those patriots with guns. They don't have any tea. They don't have a bay nearby, so I was just wondering.
Okay.
Sand is confusing.
I understand. We fight the confusion, Chris. You doing all right?
Remember the piece that I wrote, JR and I in Iraq?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Boy, do you get a sense of deja vu?
No, I would call it prophecy.
Well, I've dug that up, and I'm going to post it on the Master Report.
Do it, and remind people of the address again, please, because I always screw it up.
TheMantzelReport.blogspot.com.
And that's
TheMantzelReport.
And that's
MANSEL.
Yeah, no two L's. TheMantzel, MANSEL, report.blogspot.com.
It's a 10-piece fictional piece about a buddy and I, and we're journalists in Iraq. And it is about, I call it private security forces, but obviously it's Blackwater. And it is about the very thing that Blackwater is in trouble about, and I wrote this, about 6 months ago?
Yeah, every bit of it.
Every bit of it, and it came true. And that's what this former Navy SEAL who started this company was testifying today. I don't know if you watched any of that.
No, I actually didn't, but
I got my bucket out. My eyes kept popping out of my head, but my hearing was fine. It was obscene.
See, I've reached some sort of an obscenity threshold, Chris. And I don't know, maybe if I get a beach vacation, I can come back and watch this stuff again. But I can't right now. I just can't.
The first Republican called on to start questioning, first thing he did was turned around and said, basically, did we ask any questions like this during the Clinton administration?
I'm going to leave it at that, Chris. I got to roll
on, brother. That's a good thing to end on right there.
Let the screen.
God bless you, Kevin. I enjoyed that call.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
I hope really did.
TheMantzelReport.blogspot.com. Go read.
It'll be up there in about 15 minutes.
Good job. Good job.
All
thanks,
right,
Chris.
Take care.
Bye now.
Love to Agnes.
Thanks. Yeah, remember, a vibrator in Alabama is obscene, but hired guns in Iraq gunning down innocent civilians isn't. Like I said, I'm suffering just a little bit of an obscenity overload. You know what I mean? So that's it. Thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed what we had for you this evening. And I enjoyed your emails, your commentary in the chat room, your phone calls. It's just another night where I get to enjoy it all. And I thank you all very much. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk at WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you value what the horn does, you value what Ben Birch does. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Washington lawmakers consider a House bill that would require President Bush to show a concrete plan for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. The bill does not set a timetable for pulling troops out, and Republican leaders say they won't oppose it. The head of private security contractor Blackwater defended his staff before a House Oversight and Government Reform Committee today. He told the committee they acted appropriately at all times. His testimony comes as the FBI investigation continues into a Blackwater shootout last month in Iraq that killed 11. A Washington Post ABC News poll shows only about 25% of Americans support the administration's $190 billion war funding request. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown is visiting Iraq for the first time. He's meeting with authorities to discuss a drawdown of Britain's 5,000 troops in southern Iraq. That would have 1,000 of them home by Christmas. Violence in Iraq declined, according to a report out yesterday, but a UN report out today finds that attacks in Afghanistan have risen by 20%. They are now at the highest level since the 2001 U.S.-led invasion. For only the second time in 50 years, the leaders of South and North Korea met today for peace talks. Talks centered on Pyongyang's nuclear weaponry program and its shutdown. A United Nations envoy left Myanmar after finally being allowed to meet with the country's leader. No progress, though, was reported in swaying the regime from a brutal government crackdown on a peaceful pro-democracy movement. In Islamabad, opposition lawmakers resigned today, protesting Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf's bid for a second 5-year term. Other candidates for the office also took their case to the country's Supreme Court, asking that